Who won J15 2021? The company that you're most interested in. Are you a streamer? Elgato has some new and improved accessories for you. Are you a gamer? Valve has a way for you to play games away from your keyboard and outside of your home. Are you a fan of Path of Exile? No content! Why does one have to win? Because life is a competition! Now it's time for your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki, to talk about at least two of these J15 drops and the rest of the week's gaming news. Starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet. Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio. We are live once again with episode number 876 of our show for this July the 18th of 2021. My name is Rob Roberts, and I am joined with you live, as I am every week, by my co-hosts. First off, say hello to the one and only Dark Sakura, or Jamie Summers.
Oh, hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. It was good to see you today.
Yeah, it was good to see you. I was up too early, but y'all were worth it.
So Pokemon Go Fest was this weekend. I guess I'll get into it now. So, even though I know some of y'all say dead game, it did celebrate its five-year anniversary, and it does seem to have a lot of people still playing it, and I'm one of them. And those of you that listen to the show, if it's your first episode of OLR, hi, welcome. We talk about video games, but we talk about a lot of our lives and a lot of tangent trains and stuff, too. So it happens sometimes. And one of the conductors of a lot of those tangent trains is our friend Shane, that comes up on the show a lot. So he was actually here this weekend because the purpose was to go play Pokemon Go in San Francisco. And you might wonder, why on earth would somebody drive all the way from Idaho to San Francisco to play Pokemon Go? Well, number one, it's Shane. He does things like that. Number two, it was a nice, cool 65 degrees in San Francisco yesterday. Ask how hot it was.
Nice to meet his hubby, too.
Yeah, ask how hot it was here in Sacramento or in Boise. It was not quite
97.
The same. Yeah, it was very hot yesterday. So it was great. Yeah, so this morning, before they set out back home, we met up with Dark Sakura for some crepes. It was good. So
yes, and I still have my leftovers.
Yes. And the nice thing about that, too, is that if you notice, for those listening or watching, I should say, live on Twitch, because we are a podcast. We've had a podcast for a very long time on our podcast feed at orangelaungeradio.com. But we do tape live every Sunday night at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Blackwolf Show at VOG Network, twitch.tv/VOG Network. And if you are watching on Twitch, then when I hold up this little present that Dark Sakura got for me, you can see what it is there. And maybe those of you that have been listening to the show for a little bit know why this is really funny. Because I am holding up a figure of Ketchup from Animal Crossing, who was my BFF during the pandemic, because I had no other friends besides Alan during the pandemic.
And I bought this for you like last year.
Yes. So you were finally able to give it to me today. So that was great. Love that. So let me put her back up here next to me. It's a delicate balancing act there with Sobble right next to her. Okay, there we go. Anyway, so yeah, it was good to see you today. And I see in chat over there, there's a lot of cute and so forth. Dark Tetsuya says, OMG, Ketchup plushie, I need one. Well, there, you know, the internet is a big place and there's lots of things on it. All right.
You're welcome to DM me.
One of those other things you will find on the internet is Techmaster Loki also joining us. Hi, Loki.
I'm here.
Hi.
Working on the internet.
You are on the internet. What, you have quite a bit of internet playing behind you tonight. What in the world is that?
It's all of the internet.
The entire internet.
It's Marvel versus Capcom 3, because we don't talk about Infinite. That doesn't exist.
You're right. What is that game? I've never heard of it. Okay, so
Marvel versus Capcom 3 was the last good Marvel versus Capcom game.
Mm-hmm. You think they'll do another one of those eventually?
I hope it doesn't suck like Infinite.
Yeah, but there's always those rumors that they're going to cook up another one for the current generation of consoles.
It got weird, though. See, like, with Infinite, like, it got weird because it was a lot of the MCU characters that they brought in there. So, like, I prefer more some of these obscure characters in there. Uh-huh. Like, if they were, like, for example, if they were going to do, like, Marvel, they would never do a Capcom DC fighting game. That would still be really awesome, though. But, like, you know, we'd want like Starro in there or something like that for a DC Capcom fighting game. But like I like Shuma Gorath and like all the, like even a lot of the Capcom characters are really awesome. Like I like that mix of those characters, and I think that's great. So I would like to see one more kind of akin to the Marvel vs. Capcom 3, where it was still 2D ish and stuff, and maybe not do what they did with Infinite.
Yeah, a Marvel versus DC fighting game is just never going to happen. It's
No. I literally want to see that.
It's literally as likely as a Street Fighter versus Mortal Kombat. In fact, I would argue Street Fighter versus Mortal Kombat is more likely, because at least you're dealing with the studio's original creations with those. But I always have appreciated the irony that the studio behind Street Fighter has Marvel and the studio behind Mortal Kombat has DC Injustice, right? So I've always appreciated that irony. That's a good, and I like the Injustice games, actually.
That's the problem. Ironically, though, that is kind of just like how they work with their movies as well. Like, whereas Marvel in a lot of their movies are kind of tongue in cheek a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, some of them know how ridiculous they are and they kind of throw a bit of comedy in there. Whereas DC takes their movies way too serious and a little too dark sometimes, which is just like
a little.
So that's kind of like how they were treated a little bit with like their, you know, Injustice games and stuff like that. It's less funny and more like this is serious fighting. You know, it needs to be a little ridiculous. We need to go more Suicide Squad. Like a Suicide Squad fighting game would be a great game, but like those are some characters I'd like to see in a fighting game, something like that. You know, a bit more ridiculous.
There was very recently a tweet by, I think it was Ed Boon or something, maybe it was the studio itself, that pretty much said Mortal Kombat 11 is done. We're now at the end of, I don't want to say support, but end of cycle, basically, for Mortal Kombat 11, meaning no more DLC, no more costumes, there's no more to look forward to in Mortal Kombat 11. It's all out there. But I bring that up because that makes it very obvious that NetherRealms move on to their next game, which we all assume is Injustice 3, but there's other directions they could go. They haven't announced anything official yet, so who knows, right? Going into our chat over at twitch.tv/VOG Network, Pod Culture says the Injustice games are awesome. Breakman says Injustice are good games. The Justice League fighting game was so bad. Breakman also says, I want someone to make Celebrity Deathmatch into a video game. I think it was. Wasn't?
I thought they did. I think they did. It was on the PlayStation.
Yeah, early on. It wasn't very good.
It was PlayStation or PlayStation 2, but they did have a Celebrity Deathmatch game.
They did, and they had to get only certain celebrities that would release their likenesses, so they kind of... They were really scraping by on that. But yeah, it's not a good game. So you forgetting it is okay. and then Tiger Claw is pointing out there is a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles versus Justice League fan game. And I was going to say, as far as the Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter game collides go, that fan games, that's what you're going to get. What is that? Mugen? Or what is that thing? Everybody, like the fighting game multiverse? Yeah, that's as good as you're going to get. For that
Mugen
stuff.
Is actually emulator.
And yeah. I would say Mugen probably is better than some of like the what you'll get with some of these other games as far as
it's
like
it's better than Marvel versus Capcom Infinite.
I think they would I would think that they would treat their character like, cuz you have fans making these characters, so I think they would treat them, you know, with a little bit more respect. Just, you know, never go up against any fast food mascots or anything like that, because you're just going to get destroyed, though. And Superman has nothing on Ronald McDonald, so.
That's right. I remember that. Yikes. All right. Anyway, let's talk about the news. There was a surprising amount of news this week. So Jason, very tongue-in-cheek there in the intro there, was talking about J15, and we were kind of texting before the show, and he said, you know, it's like E3, but on July 15th, it's J15, and I'm like... Honestly, I get it. Like, there was a surprising amount of, like, just big news drops all on the same day this week. And I don't know what that's about. I don't know if that's just companies that didn't really participate in E3 kind of doing their own thing. If it's just this is, you know, mid-July seems like a good time as any to announce stuff. Is that as they're project planning it out, their Microsoft project document that tracks them from, you know, the concept to release. They just all landed on July 15th. But there was just a lot of stuff this week. Let's start off tonight talking about the big one. And I think a lot of people are talking about this and whether they're going to get one or not. Loki, please. What was the big unveil this week?
So the big unveil this week was the Steam Deck. It is a
I have a Steam Deck right here. I'm ahead of the curve.
No, not the Steam Deck, a Steam Deck. So it is a handheld PC that kind of resembles a little bit of the form factor of a Nintendo Switch. It's got, you know, built-in joysticks, and it's got a, I think it's like a 7-inch screen with, it's an OLED screen as well. So you've got that. And then it's packing an AMD processor, an APU. It's a Zen 2 RDNA 2 processor. And they've also got this cool, unique kind of combination of thumbsticks, and then they have these, like, micro trackpads underneath the thumbsticks, which is kind of cool. So, yeah, they've got that all together. They're offering it with three different, like, storage sizes and stuff like that. So you can get, I think, 64 upwards to, I think, maybe half a terabyte or 256 gigabytes. But, yeah, it's looks pretty cool.
And, yes, we've all heard that joke by now that Valve has announced the Switch Pro. So, yes, it is. But when it comes to competing with Nintendo, which is the instant comparison people want to make, is that, ooh, Valve wants to throw down with the Nintendo Switch. I'm kind of like, I honestly don't see two different companies doing such different things. I think there's something to be said about the success of the Switch leading Valve down this road of, could we? Maybe. Possibly, but let's also be real. This isn't the first time that a company has taken a look at doing like a portable PC like this, right?
This right here, though, I'm gonna tell you, I didn't mention this on Twitter, but I wanted to. This right here is gonna be a fantastic, well, hopefully a fantastic, because I don't know how all the games are gonna run, but potentially a very fantastic Game Pass xCloud system, a portable xCloud system, because. I mean, really, all that's going to be streaming anyways, at least with xCloud. And I'm not really sure how much of the Game Pass stuff that this will be able to run. But, I mean, it's pretty good. At least, potentially on paper, it could be good.
Yeah, you know, we were having a little discussion on Twitter. And my kind of initial reaction to it is, you know, in theory, it sounds really good. I want to see how it really performs. Like, I need to get my hands on one personally to try it, because I really want to see, like, how well do those games perform on this device? And I have a lot of questions in that regard. I'm also not sure this is really for me, because I don't play a lot. Like, on my Switch, 95% of the time I'm playing docked. I'm not playing portable. I already have a docked PC. You know what I mean? So I'm not sure this is for me, but that doesn't mean I'm a hater, because I think there's a lot of unique concepts here. Where I do have some concerns is that a lot of Steam's comparable hardware is kind of flopped out the gate. I'm talking about Steam machines. I'm talking about the Steam Link was a huge flop. The Steam controller,
practically giving those away.
It was the Steam controller was great, but it flopped.
Yeah, and the Steam controller was a bit odd. This is a little bit more traditional, like layout wise. They do have the additional trackpads, which are kind of cool. That you can optionally use if you want. The additional thumb or the additional buttons on the back of the controller are pretty cool, kind of like a lot of the Pro controllers that they have out now. I think where this differs from, like, say, the Steam Link is the Steam Link was kind of ridiculous in the sense that you needed a PC running this. So this is more of like, I'm going to set up, you know, this on my TV in the living room and play games from my PC on my TV in the living room. And not a lot of people really did that. Whereas this is its own thing. It's its own PC.
Yeah.
And not only that, they're like, listen, it's meant for Steam, but you can do whatever you want with it. It's a PC. I mean, if you want to put Epic Game Store on there, go right ahead. If you want to put GOG on there, go right ahead. If you want to, you know, dump the Steam OS on there and throw Windows on there, do whatever you want. Like, put emulators on there. We don't really care. I mean, like, that, it's a PC.
Well, Dark Sakura, you and I were chatting before the show that there's some things this device can't do that people are finding, right?
Yeah, so basically there are some games that aren't going to run at all, or if they do run, then not very well. And the thing is, I mean, this is basically a Linux machine, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Linux hasn't always had the best track record for video games either, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're using this feature that's called Proton, that's basically like a combination of Wine and DXVK, sorry, that are basically emulators, writers to play through the Linux ecosystem. So it prevents you from having to port the game to Linux. It just makes it run, but of course it's far from flawless. And I mean, keep in mind, remember when I had my little netbook that was running Linux and I used to play Ragnarok on it?
Yeah.
That was a pain in the ass to set up. I still use Wine on my Mac.
You were really big on that Linux Mint for a while. I had never heard of that until you came to this show and you were like, oh, Linux Mint, I love it. You should get a laptop and run it.
It's really friendly, and the good thing about it is if, you know, your hard drive goes out on your machine, you can always plug in a flash drive with Linux on it and run it off that. Mm. But anyway, there's a group called Proton that they basically track Proton instances. They're called ProtonDB. It says four of Steam's 10 biggest games won't work, or they'll start up and crash, or they'll play for a bit and fail, or they just won't launch. And those games are Destiny 2, Apex Legends, Rainbow Six Siege, and PlayerUnknown Battleground. Mm. The direct quote is that they are borked.
Go ahead. Let me finish. There's a good chat comment though along these same lines. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, according to the reports, it happens because the anti-cheat systems in those games don't play well with Photon, and so they're getting instantly booted from multiplayer servers.
And
of course, Valve is saying we're vastly improving Proton's game compatibility. Blah 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 blah.
So would that impact Dead by Daylight? Because I know that's the game you'd want to play on this.
I don't know.
Well, yes, along those same lines. So we have a comment here from Chief Tattooed Officer, which I don't think I've seen. So welcome in chat, who says, I'm a Linux user, so I'm pretty familiar with what will and won't run. The biggest issues are the two anti-cheat vendors, BattleEye and EAC. So, and I bet Denuvo's on that list, too. Let's just put him on the list, because I'm sure it's screwing everything up as well. Chief Tattooed Officer continues, Valve is working with BattleEye and EAC to try to get them to support Proton, but nobody's sure if it'll be out by the time it releases. So, and those, you know, those games you named, those are all pretty big deals there, at least as far as, like, you know, the big multiplayer bonanza type of games. So you can assume any of those big multiplayer bonanza games are going to have some type of anti-cheat in it, and that's the thing. Yeah, they've got to work out. That all being said, you know, again, I said this thing isn't for me, but I have friends who plunk down that $5 in a heartbeat because, you know, they're on transit an hour a day. You know, their lives are just configured differently where they do have more time for portable gaming. And honestly, yeah, if that were me, hell yeah, to be able to play my PC games on the go, that would be incredible. It's like, and in that way, sorry, in that way, it complements the Switch to me. It's kind of like why you own a Switch and a Xbox or a PlayStation or whatever in the first place, is that you're not going to get Nintendo games on a Steam Deck, but there's a lot of stuff on a Steam Deck you're not going to get on the Switch. Anyway, sorry, Jamie.
Although I'm wondering that since it's basically running in Linux, if there's not going to be like an OS port for that build.
Hmm.
You know, that I could install on a partition somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, or if I would be able to, I guess, like window link so that I could, you know, it's just different things. It makes me think that the virtualizers that are being used, once they are up to par,
mm-hmm.
if I would be able to run something like that on my Mac, because Mac and Linux are both built on Unix and therefore are basically cousins of each other by operating system.
You can probably just partition and run dual operating systems.
You can't. Not on an M1 Mac.
No, I'm talking about on the Steam Link.
On the Steam Link?
Or the Steam Deck.
Still wouldn't suit my purposes.
Well, but we were talking earlier in the week after this was announced, and you kind of thought, you know, I was very much of the mindset like, I got to wait until I get my hands on one myself to make the use case scenario. I'm not going to go in sight unseen on this, but I think it's interesting. And so I want to see more, but I want to actually see one. But Darksakura, you were kind of like, I could see, you know, at least, you know, I don't know if that's still your mindset when it comes to if you personally might get one of these or not, but...
My perspective on it shifted a little bit when this lovely motherboard arrived. Wink, wink, you know who you are. So I'm actually still considering rebuilding my my PC. I mean, my PC works. It just doesn't work well. So I'm going to gut it, rebuild it, and probably hook it on a KVM switch so that I can run what I need to stream off of that one, like if I want to play Mass Effect. But already Mass Effect is starting to work on Windows ARM.
Oh, nice.
So I might not need to do much with that PC right now. I'm still having the best time playing Dead by Daylight on Stadia. It would just be nice to be able to change my name at random.
Chief Tattooed Officer continues in chat. The biggest thing, I think, is if someone wants to do a AAA multiplayer game like Apex, anti-cheat is going to kill that market, and I don't personally think it'll be fixed. I agree with you on the first half. I'm not sure I completely agree with you on the second half. Like, I get that train of thought, but I'm also of the mindset where it's like, if this thing sells cuckoo bananas, and let's say tons of people want to pick up the Steam Deck and tons of them end up selling, then you know what? If the companies want to sell their games on Steam for the, you know, to be played on these things, they're going to find a way to make it work. And they may push back with the anti-cheat companies. That's not something that's going to happen overnight. And I think that is definitely where I agree in this concept, is that that's going to take time. And I think Steam Deck prospective owners should be well aware to play things like Apex, et cetera, you could be talking a couple of years before all that shit is sorted out.
For the record,
yeah,
Mass Effect Legendary Edition does play in Proton 6.8 GE2.
Huh. How about that?
I went looking it up because I was still going to see if I could play it through Wine. And it says that it plays in Proton, so we'll see.
ZenMonkey11 in chat says Valve sucks at mass production, so they'll never have enough of them. Yeah, I was looking on it said the pre-order, like if I wanted one, is already out to quarter two of 2022. So it's, you know, it's going to be a while if I decide if this is for me or not. And that's okay. How about the way they all set that up, though? Because I've been seeing a lot of articles about, oh, there's already people on eBay that are trying to scalp these things for a shit ton of money. I feel like as far as how they did the pre-orders,
just like everything again.
Yeah, like how you have to have an existing account, how they charged you $5 up front and limited you to one. I thought that was a pretty intelligent way to do it. Now, granted, I understand the system really shit the bed as everybody was trying to get in there. One of my friends said he was on that reloading screen for like 9 hours before it finally went through. Like, it was crazy. But so that part could have been better, is, you know, but maybe that also speaks to Valve really underestimated the demand for this thing. So that could be very interesting in that regard. But I, you know, of course there's going to be, you know, scalpers and opportunity seizers that sneak through. And so that's where the eBay stuff comes from. But, you know, I do like that you can still go and get one on Steam at the retail price. You just will be waiting a little bit. I don't hate that. I think that's I wish they did graphics cards that way. I wish they did Nintendo Amiibo that way. There's a lot of things I wish they would do that way, so that, you know, if I'm willing to wait, at least I'll get one of them. I wish PS5s had been done that way, quite frankly. So I can't really knock what Steam is doing outside of, okay, it shit the bed the day they unveiled it, but, you know, I'm sure you could prepare for worst case scenario and it still is somehow even worse. So I'm going to give them a tiny bit of slack on that. Loki, I know you're trying to chime in.
No, not really. I mean, I didn't end up bidding, or not bidding, going in for a pre-order on one, just because I don't know what I'd even run on it. I mean, like, I've got a PC that I pretty much use all the time. It would just be like, I guess, playing games in the living room, which is like 10 feet away. It would probably just be Minecraft. So, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know, like, why I would spend $600 for another device to play Minecraft, not as good as my computer does. I don't know. I mean, I have a huge library of games I could definitely play on it. It's just, I thought about, like, my son's looking for a computer, but, like, yeah, I'd rather get, like, a laptop or something for that kind of money.
Digirama S in chat points out Steam Deck listings have been pulled from eBay due to the fact that they violated the TOS. Oh, I wasn't aware of that follow-up. That's interesting. Meanwhile, Metroid Dream listings are still up. Well, it's like whack-a-mole. You knock them down and they come right back up. So it's that. SG100 Matt says, I thought it was interesting that Gabe Newell said his biggest issue with the Steam Deck is the price. They really wanted it to be a consumer-friendly price, but they wanted to provide a good amount of performance for this that the consumer will enjoy and is at par with current high-powered tablets and gaming devices, which I respect. Yeah, I think they did all right with the price. You know, maybe they were...
I think it's fine.
I think they did fine with the price. They might have wanted to be a little more competitive.
You can't have it the same price as like a Nintendo Switch and expect the performance that it has in there. Like, you just can't have both worlds there. You have to have, you know, what it's got to cost, what it's going to cost. I mean, yeah. I think the timing though that they announced was great. It's like you get this announcement about the Nintendo Switch OLED, everyone's disappointed, and it's like, oh hey, well, we got this if you're interested in something a little more powerful. So. That timing was great, but
I really think that was coincidental, though. I don't think Valve could have planned that.
That may have been.
It had to be because they were preparing their system, their back end for something, even if, again, it didn't hold up. They had to prepare it for this, you know. So this isn't something where Gabe is sitting in his evil lair at the top of Valve headquarters going, I see the Nintendo pre-orders were a failure. What?
Said scratching off all the threes on the calendar.
Yes, exactly. Like, I just don't think that's how it played out. I think it was a bit coincidental in that regard. So, and SG100 Matt also points out, especially in the chip shortage era we're in, I wonder how many people are buying these machines to farm Dogecoin and Bitcoin and all that stuff.
There's no GPU. I mean, there's an APU, but so there's no, like, that would not be a very good use of that.
All right. Any other comments on the Steam Deck before we move on with the show? It's interesting. Oh, there was one other little thing I want to get into because it is interesting to see Valve. Like, it's like, oh, there's what Valve's been up to outside of VR. So here's that Steam Deck. And I still kind of firmly believe this point is that if Valve really wanted to push that Steam Deck one step further, I really think they should have announced a game with it. I think they really should have announced like that new Valve product that's going to be playable on the Steam Deck. And I'm not saying they have to make it exclusive to the Steam Deck. I think that would have pissed a lot of people off. But just imagine the power of the first Portal 3. I'm completely making shit up. We all know Valve is allergic to 3. Hear me out here. Imagine the power of the first Portal 3 screenshots being in the context of a Steam Deck and what that would do for demand.
That would sell so many of them.
Exactly. So I'm kind of shocked Valve didn't take that easy opportunity. Because, again, and I guess Portal 3 is one of those things, you know, again, obviously I love Portal. I want to see that series continue. Portal is also something that I truly believe is impossible in VR and should not happen in VR. So it's not something where I'm like...
I still want it to happen.
I know you do, but I think realistically it shouldn't. So
I don't know. Like you have to try some of the like more like there's a lot of VR games that like where you think like an FPS or something like that wouldn't work, but they do. Like yeah. I don't know.
But I think the Steam Deck would have been a great place for a Portal 3 type of thing. And again, I'm not saying make it exclusive. I don't think Valve's interested in going down that route. But again, I'm just saying the power of the messaging. Imagine that, you know, it's like how Steam launched alongside Half-Life 2. Now, granted, that pissed a lot of people off at the time, but people have generally gotten used to it. So there are, and Portal 2 was kind of coupled with that thing where Steam was on PlayStation. Like, a lot of people forgot that was a thing that happened, is that your Steam account kind of ran on PlayStation, but it kind of quickly disappeared, you know? That whole mess got screwed by the PlayStation hack had happened right around that same time, and so a lot of that got lost. So, I really think that was a missed opportunity by Valve, and I'm just curious, like, where's the software? Although there was Half-Life Alyx, which is, as many folks have pointed out, that is Half-Life 3. It's just they weren't willing to put the number 3 next to VR only. And I understand and respect that decision. But for all intents and purposes, Half-Life Alyx is Half-Life 3. And they put that with the VR. So I'm just kind of surprised we're not seeing software, you know, especially because it has been such a dry well out of Valve in the software department. So, of course, then people are going to say, but the card game, but Dota 2, but, and it's kind of like, but the stuff,
yeah,
the stuff I'm interested in. So, all right. Yeah. That was the only other thought I wanted to get out was, you know, what about the software? And, you know, what else is Valve working on over there? But it is nice to at least see this.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into how was our gaming weeks. What have we been playing Portal this week? Or what have we been playing? Let's get into our gaming weeks. And we'll start with Dark Sakura.
Dead by Daylight. And Wordscapes. And my World Cup Soccer is back home, so I played World Cup Soccer.
The pinball machine.
Yes.
Nice.
Like, there's no other World Cup Soccer that's worth talking about.
I still want to come over and play pinball sometime. It's been too long.
Okay, you're
welcome. I need to do that.
Hey, I should be... Well, I'm streaming tomorrow night, but if you want to play pinball while I'm streaming, feel free.
We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm going to be gone this weekend, but we'll figure out a weeknight or something. Have a play date. It'll be fun.
Sounds good.
All right. So, Loki, how was your gaming week?
It's all Minecraft. That's what it was. No, I'm still working on issues with the server, still trying to get my latest episode out. I've been going through just, I have to change and pivot a little bit on what I want to do for content wise, just because of the lack of people on the server. And I've been exploring options at the end of the season where I may be going. And, but in the meantime though, I want to get into more, complex things with my content, and so that's kind of slowed things down a little bit, unfortunately. I'm still going through, and also hardware issues, because since everything updated the 117.1 and 117, a lot of the mod makers out there, especially the stuff that has to do with performance like Optifine and all those, they're kind of it takes time to get that all updated, and so things haven't been running as great. But I finally Iris updated, and I was able to update to that. And so now I have shaders, and it looks nice and everything, but it doesn't play nice with replay mod, which is what I use. And so if I want to render with shaders, it's extremely slow. Like, it takes about like 10, 15 minutes to render out a time lapse or whatever of, you know, several hours, obviously sped up, but it took like 2 hours to render it out instead, because just Optifine is just garbage right now. I don't know. We had more people leave the server, so that was fun. So I'm taking over some shops, I think, so they'll be coming soon. But there's to kind of not spoil it too much, because I only tease at the end, or I'm planning to tease at the end of this next episode. I think my content's going to get a little bit more into like the role play type of scenario. So going to be introducing like a storyline that goes along with everything, because I don't have people to interact with on the server. Like, everyone's on vacation, and it like literally the last 2 weeks, it's been just myself on there for a lot of it. There's some people coming back and playing and stuff, but I never interact with these people at any point. They're like AFKing or something like that. So I need to become creative and figure something out. So I want to get into more of a storyline thing, because I think that'll be more engaging with my audience. And then also animation would be kind of cool. I don't know how hard that's going to be. So that's something I need to explore as well, which will also take some time. But I do have some ideas of content I'm going to be working on. I really am trying to get this last episode out. It just took so long to like build everything in over the last couple weeks that's all the content is just a time lapse of that. And so I need to kind of build it up a little bit for this episode to come out. But I'm trying to get it down to 1 week per episode. But it's been about 2 weeks now, and that's frustrating because I want it to be quicker.
Yeah.
But I'm figuring out new ways to advertise and stuff like that, new places to kind of promote myself. So it's just been all content creation stuff, really. That's what I've been doing this week, but mainly Minecraft. I haven't really been playing anything else. Got my kids the new Zelda game, but
I really want to check that out. That's what all my friends are doing right now. It's all like my social media feeds are all Skyward Sword, and I'm sorry to say that was not a part of my week. this week, but maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll jump into it next week. But I kind of, I want to finish Yakuza still, so I don't know.
Yeah, I need to go and play games other than Minecraft at some point. But like,
yes, you do. That's all right.
I like it. I like what I'm doing, but like it is frustrating.
YouTube's hard. YouTube's hard. In some ways, it's harder than Twitch because it's not just broadcasting it live. It's recording it. Then you got to go back and edit it. That's the thing.
Yeah, and the problem with the stuff, I'm still overscoping everything again. So like, I look at like, I kind of compare myself to a lot of like what the Hermitcraft folks are doing. So like, their projects aren't nearly as the size that I'm doing. Like the build I just did this week was like something that they would have taken 4 to 6 episodes to probably complete, or, you know, worked on it a little bit at a time. Like, it is too large, but I needed it to be large because I need to get exposure and I need to do grand things in order to get everybody's attention. And that's the problem, is I'm pushing myself too hard to do that stuff because all my builds are really huge and really complex, and the redstone's only going to get more complex. So it's hard to cram that all in there. Plus, also, like, these guys are doing it full time. Like, I'm restricted with the amount of time I can work on it, and so that's also another thing that sets me back. So I can't do all that. Now, if I just did live stream stuff, that works for some things. And I know the type of scenarios that I could live stream and start getting into that as well. Mm-hmm. But it's just, I can't really do that right now. So I'm just going to keep working at it.
All right. Going to our chat, because sometimes over at twitch.tv/VOGNetwork, when we are broadcasting our recording on Sunday nights, some of you like to share your gaming weeks. And I see Black Compat has responded, which, by the way, do me a favor. Click on Black Compat and please ensure that you are following that channel. Thank you very much. Black Compat says, I've been playing Hella Slime Rancher. See, that's another one of those games. And I have watched people play that on Twitch. And I'm like, oh, I should play this. This looks fun. And then but shiny something else gets my, I need to grind in Dead by Daylight or whatever it is. So something
probably
else.
Probably have it for free
attention.
Too.
I know I have it. Yeah, for sure. So anyway, SG100 Matt. Lending some video editing expertise here. When making a video, you have to produce a ton of footage to edit down to video that is consumable. 15-minute video, you need over an hour of footage to work with. Video editing is a daunting thing. Yeah.
No, that's the problem. I have too much footage. Like, and I get that. You have to edit it down. And it's easier if there is dialogue. Because, like, for example, when, like, an average, like, you know, once again, I'm comparing myself to Hermitcraft. Their videos, they consider a lot is when they have like 2 hours worth of dialogue and footage. I'm cutting down like 10 to 20 hours worth of footage.
Oh no.
I have too much footage.
Yes. That's what you got to work on for sure.
You don't even want to see what it takes to go into my Twitch videos. I save a clip. I add an intro and outro and put my own music on it and done.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I get that. And there's some folks that's what they do is they just broadcast on Twitch and then dump their stuff into YouTube, and that works for them. That's fine. I can't do that.
Some editing.
I hardly ever do editing. It's also a difference between us even and Bobby Blackwolf. Bobby Blackwolf, his shows go up later in the week because he likes to edit to take out some of his pauses and ums and ahs and things that happen that are live. And I usually have this show up later in the night on Sunday. Why? Because I'm like, It's warts and all. Here it is. It feels like a live presentation, but it's recorded for the podcast. And it's just differences in what we're doing. But it takes a lot to edit. Where editing for me is more cropping. You know, it's like, okay, take out the stuff before the intro, take everything out after the outro. In extreme circumstances, bleep something. Where I accidentally like dox somebody by saying their last name. Like, I know that happened once on the show weeks ago. I was talking about Grandpa and I said his real name because a lot of us call him by his last name. So I bleeped it. I took it out. You know, it's very, very rare that I will do that. But for those types of circumstances, yes, I will edit. But it takes a big thing to get me to edit the show.
I would reckon, though, that using my Twitch clips means I've already edited.
Yeah, that is the nice thing about Twitch, too, is that you can kind of, like, stamp where the good stuff was and then go back and, like, do the clips later.
The highlight feature has actually been really helpful because then that saves me from having to download the entire VOD.
Yeah.
And then I can save just what I want to. But then again, you know, you could what are you capturing through? Are you using OBS?
Yeah, I'm using Streamlabs OBS. So it
yuck. Slobs is terrible.
I have no problem with it. It works just fine for what I'm doing. So it's really a lot of it is time lapses take a lot because I have to replay mod. I have to go back and I have to basically pick the camera path and do all the adjustments through there. So it's cutting that out. And because it took so long to build what I built, I have it's about a week's worth of time lapse to go through. So I've gone through two or three hours worth of clips right now to time lapse, and I have to time lapse the whole thing and do the camera sweeps and stuff like that. Even though I'm going to cut that down significantly, that's what ends up being probably an hour because it's an 8x speed, so an hour worth of clips is going to be down to like 3 minutes. But I still have to process the whole thing to get it down to that 3 minutes, and it's just taking a long time. So, plus now that I'm going to be doing some other things involved creating some data packs and actual mods for Minecraft as well in order to tell the story that I'm going to be telling. So there's other work that's going into it now, too.
Hmm. All right. By the way, this whole talk about streaming and recording at the same time, that's actually powering OLR right now. So, of course, we're streaming to Twitch, but then there is a local recording of the movie made on the Mac Mini. I don't know if everybody knows, but the video and the Twitch stuff is all powered by Mac Mini. So we end up saving the local recording there. We pass it through GarageBand, and that will, because GarageBand will actually read movies and strip out that audio and make the MP3. And that's basically
You and I need to sit down so I can give you the crash course in logic.
Well, I mean, but for again, I'm cropping, not editing. For what I'm doing, I don't need the primo materials. You know, I could use Audacity if that was the thing, you know, so it's good enough. But yeah, if we ever did want to get fancier, sure. But I don't know if I have time to get fancier. All right.
There's some other things that we'll talk offline.
Fair enough. All right, my gaming week, other stuff. So let's see, for my gaming week. So I talked a little bit about Pokemon Go. So Pokemon Go Fest was this weekend, and it was to celebrate the 5-year anniversary of the game. And they did a whole thing where it's all virtual. So all that talk about, you know, the Chicago festival and how everything clogged the network there, that has been gone for 2 years now because of the pandemic. So last year and now this year were Pokemon Go Fest everywhere. They cut the price way down this year. It was $5 in honor of the 5th anniversary. I also kind of think they heard some of the feedback last year that it wasn't really justified what they were charging last year. And I think $5 was a little more appropriate for this year. There were lots of different types of spawns. You got a couple things like Sock and Chatot that don't usually spawn in this part of the world that you were able to catch. They released some new shinies. Today was all about raids. And if you're newer to the game, it was a really good chance to catch up on a lot of legendaries you may have missed because they had put out literally every legendary was available today if you were able to find it. Just not the mythical stuff. There is a difference there. But there was a lot. Like, apparently I never got a Zekrom for whatever reason. I just missed that. So I got one today thanks to the day two. So it was fine. It was a fun event. Honestly, it was just more about the people. So we went out to San Francisco, as I mentioned. And we, to avoid crazy traffic, we took BART in to Embarcadero, and we played around that part of Market, which was really dead. But when we went out to Embarcadero Street and walked down from there to Pier 39, yes, that is a long walk. I did 12 miles worth of walking yesterday, 23,000 steps, because that's just how much there was going on with the games. That's why I'm so tired today and a little sunburned. Even though I used sunscreen, it wasn't enough. But anyway.
That stuff helped, though, right?
What's that?
The stuff I used helped, right?
Oh, yeah. That we were talking about at breakfast? Yeah, it did. In fact, yeah. I could use a little more, but it's all right.
I have multiple containers, and it's all over the counter.
No worries. But anyway, so there was my point is there were tons of people, like, walking from Embarcadero to the pier, and you know a ton of them were playing Pokemon Go. I would say half the people on the street were playing Pokemon Go, and the other half were going, why are all these people looking at their phones? And I heard people ask that out loud and all of that. And it was also very easy to spot people because they were giving away those little Pikachu hats. I didn't get one. But there were a lot of – if you were curious – what were they doing in the cities at those locations? Because certain cities had like special locations. They had, I don't know if they were Niantic employees. I doubt it. They were probably contractors that were either setting up little photo op type things, or they were just giving away little Pikachu hats to people, which is fun for the kids and stuff like that. And that's pretty much all they were doing. But there were just so many people in San Francisco playing the game. It was quite a thing to behold. Also, to put it into perspective, there's a badge now in Pokemon Go for if you use a lure, how many Pokemon get caught with your lure. That's one of the badges that you get. So I think my badge for that, thanks to Community Days and stuff like that, was at about 500 yesterday, or when I started yesterday. After I put one lure down off the beaten path, it was near one of the photo opportunities, but it was still kind of off the beaten path a little bit. So after one lure yesterday, my stat is now 2,146 caught off a lure. So that means 1,600 Pokemon were caught off one lure off the beaten path yesterday. So that's how many people were playing Pokemon Go in San Francisco. So yeah, it's pretty crazy. But I had fun. It was honestly, it was more just about the people, the experience. The game is whatever. it honestly is. I didn't get nearly as many shinies as Shane did, because I don't know what it is with that boy's luck. He walked out of Go Fest with like 43 shinies. And I was like, I remember when I caught the shiny sock in like the second hour of the day, I was like, well, that's it. My day's not going to get any better than this. I got the shiny sock. That's like the best thing you can get today. I guess I'm done. And I was right. I got two of the Chimecho. I don't remember the name. It's a little like wind chime thing. Chimecho. I don't remember what it's called. But that is the... Pokemon that I was able to catch two shinies of yesterday. So I guess that was cool. Yeah, I didn't get a Dino shiny. I'm sorry to say it. So, oh, Chimecho, says Sia Tiberi. Oh, I didn't know. Oh, that makes sense, though. I horribly mispronounce. So I mispronounce all your names on this show. Of course, I'm going to mispronounce Pokemon as well. So it happens. All right. Anyway, so that was Pokemon Go. What else did I do in my gaming week? I did Dead by Daylight, of course, because the anniversary event's still going on, trying to get some cakes. Oh, I finally prestiged a character.
Give us some more blood points, though. That would be nice.
Yeah.
I mean, not blood points, but iridescent shards.
Oh, yeah, that too. That would be nice. I played a little bit of that, but not a lot. I played a little more Yakuza. Like a Dragon. I got up to chapter 5 on that, so I'm still moving on with that story. And then randomly, this is super random, I decided to play Blaster Master Zero again, because I was just in the mood. Well, I was reading stuff. I had forgot the third game in that series is coming out. I knew there was a 2. Maybe we had briefly mentioned 3 on this show, but I'd forgot. And like it's coming out very soon. So I was like, I should play through that series again. So I started playing Blaster Master Zero again, because it's fun. So there's that too. Tay plays games in chat, says playing DBD in 2021. Cringe. Tay,
groundbreaking.
Which, by the way, is another stream y'all should be following. Tay is saying, you're talking about playing DBD in 2021. You play a lot of, although I think now he's an Overwatch main. I think actually so. Mm-hmm. In watching some of the recent streams, but
a few other typically DBD streamers have been switching on to some other things lately too.
A lot of feedback that the anniversary event is not having the positive effect on the game that people thought it would. That people are
they need
playing
to fix
a little
that
scummier
dang
right now.
DC thing to where they start.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, there's that too.
Holding people accountable for being assholes.
Anyway, shout out to Tay. Everything I needed to learn about looping and teabagging in Dead by Daylight, I learned from Tay.
No teabagging in my game.
All right. Anyway, let's move on. I think that was it for my game week. Let's get into some more news. And I love this one that we're going to get into here. Loki, please start us off.
So there is a brand new, we kind of talked, we briefly mentioned it last episode, but there is a brand new fighting game, kind of akin to Smash Brothers, called Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl. It is coming out by the developer Ludacity, and they said that you know, it's going to be out on pretty much all the different platforms that are out there right now, all the console platforms. But it's just, it's drawing characters from like all of like Nickelodeon shows, all these different Nickelodeon shows. So there's like, you know, stuff you would normally expect to be in there, and then like other things as well. Not only that, so aside from the characters, we'll get to those in just a sec, but there's also, you know, it's actually a decent fighting game based on like some of the features that they're implementing, including rollback netcode as well, which is actually a little bit better than.
That's what's the part that slays me, is that the internet code is going to be better than Smash Brothers.
Yeah, so that's kind of funny. So the characters announced so far, and this is pretty awesome. So you have from Ninja Turtles, and this is the 1980s Ninja Turtles, Leonardo and Michelangelo.
That's the one most people
remember.
Why
is there no Raphael?
Well, they've only announced some of the characters yet. They haven't announced everybody yet. So this is just what was featured in that first trailer. And I assume that all of them will be in there. I mean, come on.
Tiger Claw, you're just going to have to humor me here. The 80s Ninja Turtles are the ones people remember and want to see in these things, okay? Because that was the arcade game, too, was the 80s version of the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. So you have Nigel Thornberry from the Wild Thornberries. Ren and Stimpy from Ren and Stimpy. Also, Powdered Toast Man. From SpongeBob SquarePants, which I expected SpongeBob characters in there. SpongeBob, Patrick Starr, and Sandy Cheeks. We have Oblina from Aw Real Monsters. The Loud House, Lincoln Loud and Lucy Loud, also a cartoon I haven't watched. Helga from Hey Arnold. We have Reptar from Rugrats.
Yay.
Zim from Invader Zim, which
yes!
That sold
awesome.
Me the game right there. Danny from Danny Phantom. Cat Dog. Aang and Korra from, you know, Avatar.
That's
so
cool.
That's just pretty awesome.
Okay.
And then in case you're wondering, this, for those who are hesitant, John Kay, Chris Savino, and Butch Hartman will not be paid for royalties for this game. Because, you know, I guess they're questionable. I mean, there's other characters you can probably assume are going to be in there. Obviously, Reptar's probably not going to be the only Rugrats character. But
we need Angelica with princess powers.
Okay, so hold on. Before y'all shout out the characters we need, it was suggested we do a list on this topic. Now, I suggested. I don't have everything set up for a list, but I think we could do an informal list here. I need to read some of the suggestions from chat, though, because you all are fucking slaying me right now. I'm dying. So, okay, some of the chat comments here from chat. We have Tay Plays Games says, do I get to play Lori Beth Denberg from All That? I love her. Fun fact, Alan and I actually looked into, because she actually will do weddings now. We looked into it. That's all I'm going to say. We didn't do it, but we looked into it because I would have loved that. SG100 Matt says, so is Linda Ellerby from Nick News, Master Hand, or the final boss? I love that. Some folks saying Mr. Wizard. Okay, you guys are going to say. So here we go. I would like to know informally three suggestions you have for the Nickelodeon fighting game. Loki, clearly you've been stewing on this. I need to give Jamie, maybe she's been suing that too. I'll give her a little time to brainstorm.
Give me a second.
But Loki, we'll go to you. What would be like your top three suggestions for the game?
And I had to dig deep for some of these. So starting with number three, David the Gnome. Got to be in there. I think we have to have, was it Barf from You Can't Do That on Television? And then... gosh, I mean, Mr. Wizard would be pretty good, too. I think that'd be funny, just because he's so mean to the children sometimes. Or he's harsh with them. Gosh, I don't know. There's so much you could do. Like, they could really tap into so many things. Like, you know, if they want to get, like, into, like, the live-action stuff, you know, Artie the Strongest Man in the Universe, you know, something like that. Like, just all sorts of crazy shit.
All right. I'll do my top three. So my number three would be the I'm going to show my age here. I don't give a fuck. My number three would be the security guard from today's special.
Yes. I love today's special.
Me too. That was my fucking jam back in the day. So I don't remember the dude's name, but it was the other one was the mannequin that would only, it was like straight out of that.
Yeah, the
80s,
lady.
The lady would only come to life when looked at or whatever. But I think the security guard was the one I remember. So, let's see. Dark Tetsuya says Sam, I think. Oh, we'll go from that. Okay, so that would be my number three. My number two would be the giant nose from Double Dare that was always part of the obstacle course. And they would have to, like, you know, dig through the nostril to find the flag. And it was really gross. So that's my number two, is the giant nose from Double Dare. And then my number one would be, and somebody had already said this in Discord, I don't care, I'm stealing this joke. My number one would be Alanis Morissette, because I stan and B, she was, as everybody knows, part of the cast of You Can't Do That on Television for a short time back in the day. So Alanis Morissette would be fair game to be in the Nickelodeon fighting game. So Dark Sakura.
What is no?
So many people with dark in their names. Dark Sakura, what is your top three?
So my starting with number three, then I would reckon Moira Quirk from Guts.
Yes.
She was a referee.
The Astro Crag has to be the stage. Absolutely.
Well, she's still, you know, done a lot of voice acting. So she's been in stuff like recently, and she's even worked in Skyrim and everything. So would get really great voice acting from her.
All right. Love it. What else?
All right. So, Eureka from Eureka's Castle.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
And then the era of drama. I take that back. One of the Tomorrow People.
Oh shit! Okay, what? I forgot that was on Nickelodeon for a
like,
short time.
Who was the redheaded or something guy from the 90s Tomorrow People?
Oh, that's a good one. All right, you guys in chat are killing me. Okay, you ready for some more chat suggestions? Here we go. Bobby Blackwolf says the pinwheel. That's it. Just the pinwheel.
Yeah. I was actually looking at the stuff on Pinwheel House, because I almost thought about the hat people.
And I mean, we've got also, you know, there's like so many good things. Fairly Odd Parents, you know, Timmy Turner or something like that.
Nobody
and
brought
I
up.
I came so close to saying Dr. Doofenshmirtz, but Phineas and Ferb is on Disney.
I'm actually super disappointed nobody brought up any of the characters from Hey Dude. Like, and the Dude Ranch should be a stage.
I was going to say the boxers from Salute Your Shorts.
Okay, other comments in chat. You guys are going off. I love it. Why No Record in chat says, need someone from Wild and Crazy Kids. Yes, they had the same host for years. And then, our voiceover guy, Jason, is in chat. VXJSNXV says, Game Over, the Bully from Nick Arcade. That's a good one. Tiger Claw suggests Danger Mouse. Yes.
Yeah.
Or
Banana Man.
What was his little Pinfold? Was his
Penfold.
Friend?
Yes. No, remember Pinfold.
Pinfold.
Shush.
let's see. I'm dying.
Count Duckula.
Oh my Duckula. God, Count Duckula.
Those were all the Thames production ones. And
yes,
when Nickelodeon used to go off the air, if you remember those days.
I do. I was really young, but I do.
They would always show after Danger Mouse or Count Duckula, depending on the day, they would show Banana Man.
I also remember for a short time it would be the A&E channel at night. It was Nick in the Day. That was before Nick at Night, if you can believe it.
Yeah, it was before. Ours would just go off the air.
Nick at Night's going to have to be its own fighting game. Like, we can't. Yeah.
Hey, Rob.
What?
Did you know that in the third season of the 90s Tomorrow People, Christopher Lee was the villain in it?
No.
I'm going to have to go back and find all of these, because I missed a bunch of the ones before they canceled it.
Honorable mention to Powdered Toast Man from Ren and Stimpy, by the way, now that it's on my mind. Anyway.
Oh, character log.
Okay. So, Mere Muse says, I beat you by seconds with Hey Dude, while they are subscribing again to the channel. Thank you for that. You guys, it's very obvious. A lot of people, especially in their 30s and 40s, and some in their 20s, go figure. A lot of people have a lot of passion around the Nickelodeon franchise. There is a lot of potential here for an amazing game. So I really can't stress this enough. or stress this enough. Excuse me. So do not fuck this game up.
No, fuck this game up. To go into that, let's talk a little bit about how this actually came about. So the developer actually put out a game called Slap City, which is kind of a similar type of genre game. So after they put that game out, they were approached by Nintendo to make this game. So, you know, so they do have, you know, at least a track record of putting out, you know, some decent fighting games. But yeah, right now they said, you know, they don't want to talk about the full roster, but like I'm hoping that it's going to be like I'll pay for DLC for all this obscure shit. I mean, like, seriously, like if Hey Dude and, you know, all that stuff's got to be DLC,
if they
legit
get a single You Can't Do That on Television reference in there, I will lose my shit. Like,
or even as a stage, I'll take a stage.
Yeah, like the locker jokes as a stage would be great.
Oh my God, that would be amazing.
And the lockers open up and they're telling jokes to each other.
Oh, that would be great.
Oh, I love it. I hope their boardroom conversations on making this game are as lively. Tay Plays Games in chat says Slap City has insanely good reviews on Steam for what it's worth. So let's not hype this up too much. But on the other hand, too late. All right.
Well,
what was that, Darsara?
You want to know what sucks?
Huh?
Is I've been going to see if I can find Blu-rays of the Tomorrow People.
No, I think that's great. That was an awesome show. Didn't they try to do a reboot of that a few years ago?
They did, actually, and it got really great reviews, but they didn't renew it. It was on CW in 2013.
Yeah, it was a CW thing. Yeah. I remember that. Anyway, all right, let's move on and talk about other awesome ideas out there. Maybe. I don't know. We don't know a lot about this idea, but we do know Final Fantasy X-3, maybe. There was a 10 and a 10-2, of course. And many people are aware of these games from the remasters that they made on PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4. And I think these did pretty well. I know a lot of people revisited the games. They ended up coming out on Xbox Game Pass. So I'm sure 10 and 10-2, the remasters, did pretty well for Square. And it probably it could have them discussing, like, what might a 10-3 look like someday. And as it turns out, Tetsuya Nomura, who was character designer, mentions, if we are to make 10-3, we somehow have a synopsis written by Nojima-san. It's sleeping right now, but the plot itself does exist. Now, Kazushige Nojima adds, I had the opportunity to work with people who entered the game industry after playing Final Fantasy VII, but now the phase has moved, and I'm going with people who entered after playing Final Fantasy X. Toriyama commented, the probability is not zero, but we are not in a phase where we can talk about it unless we have finished producing the Final Fantasy VII remake, which I respect that. Don't bite off more than you can chew, and there's already a lot to still be done with the Final Fantasy VII remake. We don't even know how many more parts there are. Are they going to try to wrap it up in a second game, or are they going to spread? Because I'm going to argue everybody expects it's going to follow the template of Final Fantasy VII. I don't think it might. I think it could wrap it up in a second game if they wanted to. I think
they better not separate my OTP again.
But we'll see. Anyway, but so there may be, you know, one or two more games Final Fantasy VII Remake series. But it is interesting they're leaving that door open to a 10-3, and it's really the equivalent of, so you're saying there's a chance, is really where we're left when it comes to Final Fantasy X-3, but it's they did write the story for it. And also, you know, there's probably stories and treatments that have been written for a lot of games that never came to fruition. So it's interesting to think, what might that look like? And even
it's
if they
all blitzball.
Even if they didn't make it's it a game, they could make
Final Fantasy X-3, oops, all blitzball.
Oh, God, no. I hated all the Blitzball stuff.
There were rumors that Blitzball was supposed to be added to the Final Fantasy XIV expansion, but for better or worse, that didn't seem to come to fruition. So, Dark Tetsuya in chat says, I still want a 6-2. Yeah, there's lots of Final Fantasy games that people would like to see, especially, you know, for a long time, the idea of sequels to Final Fantasy games didn't really exist. It wasn't until 10-2 when it was like, wait a minute. They're doing 10-2? Why aren't they calling it 11? Oh, it's a direct sequel to 10. Oh, 11 is the online game. So it's it's interesting. And then after that was when we got the Final Fantasy IV sequel. Folks forget about that. And I understand because it's really not a great game. But the After Years was a sequel to Final Fantasy IV. So it'd be interesting. I'd love to see a 12-2. But what I really want to see is just a remaster of the 13 trilogy for current consoles, because I think it's time to revisit that and for justice to be served a little bit for Final Fantasy 13 in retrospect, because I don't think it's as bad as everyone says it was. Tay Plays Games in chat is wondering, who is 10-3 made for? Most of the kids haven't played anything other than 14 or the 7 remake. I don't see a 10-3 superseding a 16 and a 17. I'm not sure one has to cancel the other, because Square does have multiple development teams, and obviously they are capable of producing multiple Final Fantasy projects at a time. And I think that is best demonstrated by the fact that Creative Division 3 is currently making Final Fantasy 14 and Final Fantasy 16. That is a huge undertaking, and that's just one studio at Square. Granted, one studio that has made Square a lot of fucking money, thanks to Final Fantasy 14. And you know, we could get into the whole thing about how Final Fantasy 14 is only getting bigger right this second, which is interesting. But I'm not going to go there right this moment. But to answer the question that Tay poses about who is 10-3 made for, I think it's because of the remasters. It's not the original PlayStation 2 release. I think it's because of the remasters that we do have another generation visiting those games. It's kind of like, and this is random, but I don't give a fuck. You know, one of my favorite movie of all time, period, is Clue the movie from the 1980s. That movie fucking bombed at the box office. People did not understand the multiple ending thing. It did not make a lot of money at the box office.
It was way ahead of its time, really.
It was very much ahead of its time. But now people hold that in such a high regard, even if they were born much later. You see a lot of, you know, people in their 20s and 30s that love Clue the movie. Where did they find it? They found it in reruns on basic cable in the 90s. Because you guys might remember, do you guys remember Channel 31, which is one of the stations here locally? I don't care, I'm going to shout it out. Channel 31 used to play Clue the movie in the afternoon all the fucking time. And there's a lot of stations around the country where they did that. So a lot of people discovered Clue when it was broadcast during the day on TV. Now, my point with that is, I think there is a younger generation that's discovering 10 and 10-2 because of the remasters. And the fact that these remasters are only like $20 now. And so especially with the pandemic and people playing more games, I think probably more people were playing these games now than probably did in the beginning. So I think that's why the conversation about 10-3 is happening now in particular. So it's very interesting. Bobby Blackwolf says, is this the right time for me to profess my love for Speed Racer 2008? Why not? I think a lot of people really shit on the Matrix sequels when they came out. But now look what's happening. Another Matrix sequel. Like, sometimes things just age a certain way and people want to see them back. Jason in chat, literally the definition of a cult classic. Absolutely. It's hard to call 10 and 10-2 a cult classic because they, unlike Clue the movie, unlike the Rocky Horror Picture Show, unlike some video games that are cult classics, 10 did well when it released.
Yeah.
But I get it. I'm not saying that label is inappropriate. It's just a little different. But an excellent aside here, Jason says, I discovered Earthbound because it was the cheapest game at Walmart. Fifth Dream does point out it's 10's 20th anniversary. That's a good point, too. So, wow. I would be all about a 10-3, but I understand there's only so many games that Square can do without compromising the quality. And I also realize that doing a game now with the 4K textures and the PlayStation 5s and all that stuff, it takes a lot more than it did on the Atari 2600 than the NES. It takes a lot more resources. It's a bigger industry. So I understand they can only do so many games at once. But maybe someday. Well, never say never.
You remember I imported 10-2.
I do remember that. I think the first time I ever saw it was you playing it.
Yeah, because I knew it was going to have an English release, but I had to have Kotakumi doing the music.
All right. Let's move on to our next story, because again, another thing from this week that I think is huge news. So Darkstalker.
I can get my camera to not fall over. There we go. So now I'm going to say this as someone who plays most of my games through a streaming service. I love streaming my video games. It's how I get to play PC stuff on my Mac. And they look good. And people seem to be pretty surprised by it. Well, it looks like Netflix is actually trying to get in on that action now, too.
You are the official Dead by Daylight Stadia streamer on Twitch.
I
don't know any other bitch that streams that game on Stadia. You have that market fucking cornered, honey.
Well, yeah, but they won't let me put Stadia in my keywords or Mac gaming in my keywords,
really?
Because whatever, people don't think people play on Macs, and hello, y'all should see my setup, okay? My setup is pretty. What was that, Tace? Sakura is single-handedly keeping Stadia going. Huge. Yep. Anyway, so Netflix wants to get on that action. They are looking to offer video games through their streaming service, as reported to Bloomberg. They said that the games will appear as a new genre on the platform. Kind of like how their documentaries and stand-ups and other things go. They're not really putting too much out into specifics on that, but Netflix doesn't plan on charging any extra for access.
Oh, wow.
And then there's also, some of the others are looking into it too, like Disney Plus is trying to do it, you know.
Oh, wow.
But Disney, Comcast, NBC Universal, they have other outlets though, but Netflix is just Netflix, right?
Right.
So they're looking to add more to their user base. Right now, as of April of this year, it reported 208 million subscribers globally, which added another 4 million after the first quarter of 2021. They thought it was going to go get higher, but it still grew decently. It was just a little bit less than they thought it would, you know. And so they're really looking to diversify. And it's not like they haven't had ties with the video game industry. Mm-hmm. There was that Stranger Things video game that came out in 2019.
Yes.
And Stranger Things was licensed to Dead by Daylight.
Which
Hello.
We keep bringing up, yes, but that is true.
Because the demo doggy is cute. He's a cute little woofer. But also, they've had Castlevania. There's other video game related stuff that's been around.
That is an interesting full cycle thing, is that like, oh, Netflix really became this booming place for video game media, and now they might want to take that back to actually having video games. Or
they also have their choose your own adventure content as well.
Limited gaming exists now. Yeah,
Netflix just had the rentals. You could rent some games, but you couldn't play when the streaming service replaced the rental service. You, of course, at the time, technology didn't exist to stream a game like that.
Right, because there were
the closest
competitors,
had to a streaming game was like playing Tetranet.
There were folks like Gamefly that were trying to sneak into that market about being the Netflix of games in that regard. Like, literally, when we're talking about discs, and that service still exists. Actually, Bobby talks about using it still to this day. I'm just curious, like, to what intensity of games are we talking about? And that's, I feel like, the wild card here. Because, yeah, when you think of Netflix games today, you think about, okay, Minecraft Story Mode is there. It's different, but it's there. The Netflix, the Bandersnatch Black Mirror, which is very, it's choose your own event, but it is a game. It would qualify as a game, but it's, you know, very limited. Are we talking about those sort of limited experiences? Because, or is it something that's really meant to be done on your PC? Because when I think about Netflix, I think about logging on my Xbox, logging on my PlayStation, logging on my television. And are Microsoft and Sony going to allow Netflix to get into this space?
They also had Minecraft Story Mode as well. That was...
Well, no, I know, I mentioned...
Keep in mind as well, I'm going to take a little touch on politics.
Okay.
We just had that executive order issued for higher competition in business markets. I doubt very seriously that the competition's going to be able to say much about it thanks to the new legislation.
And to be fair,
well, they still need to get a replacement for a GPI still, though, which they haven't filled that position yet. So right now they can't do anything until that happens.
And at least in Microsoft space, I remember I was playing AntStream on the Xbox One, and AntStream is a cloud service for retro games. So that whole concept of, like, I guess streaming games, even if it's not necessarily a Microsoft product, at least in this Microsoft space, we've seen it happen before. For some weird reason, that client's been unavailable for a while. I'm not sure what's going on with AntStream because my subscription finally ran out, and I don't plan on re-upping until I can get it on Xbox again, specifically the Xbox Series X. But I think it's interesting, at least there, that sort of precedence is there. So, Bobby, I think in their Discord, the Xbox One client is even unavailable at the moment. It was there before, but I remember them saying there were some issues or something like that. I could be wrong, but I would want them to have it on Series X and S and all that stuff.
For the record, by the way.
Yeah.
I did also just real quick take a peek because there's a fairly recent article about Stadia as well from gamesindustry.biz, which is a pretty good site for some general news. But they were talking about how, of course, Epic has sued Google for the way that their revenue models work. And they're supposed to be readjusting their revenue models.
So that's coming up a little later in the show, actually. So,
is it? Oh, no. I wasn't aware.
We'll talk about that a little later. Yeah.
Okay. But at any rate, according to everything here, it does look like they're alive and well.
Yeah. So
I just didn't see any point in doing their own development.
I'm just curious, like, again, like, what types of games are we talking about on Netflix? And I want to see a little more about what that looks like before I really try to put on the crystal ball and all that and really try to predict
more.
Anything. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Okay. They hired Mike Verdu to be the vice president of game development.
I was just saying, I did hear that. Yeah.
Yeah, but basically he was the VP of content for Facebook Reality Labs. And a senior VP of mobile for EA. So he's got a good, you know, resume behind him. His CV is looking pretty decently. And then, the one I'm actually, I would have more of a worry about is Amazon's. I don't think it's going to do very well.
You know, that kind of plays into a comment that Tay Plays Games says in our chat, is that GeForce Now and Stadia are already struggling. Why not capitalize on it? And there, you're right. Amazon's, I don't even remember what it's called, Luna, something like that. We've barely heard a blip.
Luna.
We've barely heard a blip about that. So that really only leaves Microsoft's entry, which they really haven't fully gotten into yet. Like, I still feel like Microsoft's still kind of like teasing it and dipping their toe in the water with the whole xCloud stuff. And, you know, so I agree that, like, if Netflix is going with a cloud-based strategy, that could be very interesting. And, you know, again, especially if they are bundling it in with their, you know, movie part, it means it's going to open it up to all these people who already have Netflix. And I think Netflix has to kind of look at how do we – yeah, pretty much everybody who's going to sign up for Netflix for movies and TV has already done it. How do we keep expanding beyond that?
I don't really think, though, that right now that Stadia or GeForce are really struggling because they've got a decent market. I mean, I personally know more people on GeForce than on Stadia, but I mean, everything's been kept up to date, and Stadia, Google has more relationship deals with these companies that they're offering the games of space through.
But I mean, like, neither is that unbeatable Goliath yet.
No, not yet. But I think that because they got the head start on it, that I think they're going to stay. They've already got their names behind them. You know, GeForce probably, like, if you're going to think of a tech company, you know, Google is going to be up there above NVIDIA because you're thinking of NVIDIA when you're thinking of parts. And lack of graphics cards. We're looking at
availability,
you.
Availability, yeah.
But at any rate, I think Netflix has a good chance. I don't think Amazon does.
We'll see. I still need to know more about Netflix, but I think it's the fact that they can essentially Trojan horse their service to millions mm-hmm. of people that already have Netflix is going to give them something that these other companies, all of them that you've named, don't have. And I think that's going to be fascinating.
I'll actually tell you what the deciding factor for Stadia was for me. Was that, because keep in mind, now it was strictly for Dead by Daylight, right?
Right.
But I have a bunch of other games because I pay for the Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got lots of good stuff on there that I can play that I have played. I mean, I've never had any lag or any problem with it. Just, you know, if the server goes down, the server goes down, and that's all it is. What I like is that the thing that really cemented it for me was the fact that Behavior had that thing to link my Stadia account to my Steam account. So that my achievements and everything will cross over, even if I buy the DLC again, which I already had a bunch of the DLC anyway and rebought them on Stadia. So that was my deciding factor. The fact that Google has relationships like this with other companies sort of speaks to me.
Yeah. All right. Well, a good discussion. And I think this is really just the first of many nights we're going to be talking about this in the coming months as we start to see more of what this looks like. So,
well, and one last little thing.
Yes, of course.
I'm hoping that this ends up being healthy competition.
Oh, yeah.
That it encourages these other companies to make their models more attractive, to maybe offer like tiered subscriptions, for example.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Amethyst Rose Witch, you know, my friend and coworker, she uses the GeForce service and pays like $5 a month. I pay $9 for Stadia Pro.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Stadia Pro is also going to give you like a bunch of free games while you're at it. Just saying.
Yeah. And Tay Plays Games in chat says, "Hi, Timmy. We already pay $17.99 a month for Netflix. Now you can stream games." That is absolutely going to be what gives Netflix a competitive edge if they're not shit games. And that's obviously, and here we go again, back to that OLR golden rule we've been saying for years and years. Whoop.
A system is only as good as the games that are on it.
That is exactly it. So if Netflix goes into gaming and it's just a bunch of shit Android games are, you know, ported for streaming service or whatever, not saying that every Android game is bad, but we know there's a lot of garbageware out there.
I don't think they'd go that way, though.
I'm hoping not.
Smart people.
I'm hoping so. I'm hoping you're right. Let's see what they have in store when they start announcing what the games are, for sure. DJ Rama S, and I'll let this be the last comment, says, "The NES, the Netflix Entertainment System." We'll see. We'll see. All right, moving on. Loki.
Yeah, so this is at least a rumor of a brand new IP being worked on by the Coalition, the folks behind Gears of War. Of course, leaked from a LinkedIn profile, basically saying that someone is a level designer on a brand new IP at Coalition. So, I mean, yeah, Gears of War is not going to go on forever, so it makes sense that they'd be working on something new. When are we going to hear about that new IP? Who knows? I don't
Shrug.
Know. It's not surprising.
I'm curious to see what they're cooking up. It's nice when you can kind of get away from that franchise that you've, like, people don't think you can make anything else but that game. So I think it'll be nice for them to kind of get away from that and make something different.
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know. I'm sure it'll be cool.
Yeah. All right. Something I think is going to be pretty cool. I hope so. And is also going to be competition in the MOBA space is Pokemon Unite. And now we know when Pokemon Unite is coming out. That's right. It's a Pokemon MOBA. So it's League of Legends, Heroes of the Storm, Dota 2, but it's Pokemon. Yeah, this is the game that will get Shane to play MOBAs. And I'm actually excited to try this because I've really sucked at other MOBAs like League of Legends. I've been bullied off of that game. Heroes of the Storm, I will only play PvE because I was bullied off of that game. Dota 2, I'm not sure I still completely understand. So I kind of love the idea that there's going to be a Nintendo MOBA because hopefully I won't be bullied off of the Switch, but I might be. I don't know. We'll see.
So is it Nintendota?
I'm leaving now.
Why
bye.
Are you like this? All right. Anyway.
Come on. I've been this way for a long time.
Pokemon Unite, we know the date. It's going to be the 21st next week. So by the next show, this will probably be a part of my gaming week. It will come out on the Switch. So this is in advance of the mobile release. They're going to have a mobile version of this as well. And if you get into the Switch version early before August 31st, you will get a mythical Zeraora, which will let you use that Pokemon, which I imagine they're going to be it's free to play. But they're probably going to sell characters like a lot of games do and items and things like that. It will have cross-play capabilities with mobile. And, yeah, we've known about this for about a year now. In general, two teams of five Pokemon are going to try to kick each other's butt. There are different scoring areas on each side. You score points by capturing wild Pokemon on the field. You want to score more points than the other during the time period. You get to level, evolve, and learn new moves by defeating wild Pokemon. I think that is an interesting concept that none of these other MOBAs that I know of anyway have, is that, like, let's say you play a Charmander. I don't even remember if that's one of them in the game. But as you play the game, you evolve into Charmeleon, Charizard. And I think that's kind of neat, the concept of, like,
what about
Charmander
Shepard?
Probably a DLC that will cost you $20,000. It'll be like that Dead by Daylight DLC where you're paying more for a fucking Chris skin than you did for the Resident Evil DLC. So
I paid for the Chris skin.
As did I, because...
And the Claire. And the other Leon and all of them. Because I paid for Survivors, Rob. And guess who doesn't play Survivor?
Okay.
Me.
Repeat after me, Dark Sakura. I am...
A consumer whore.
There you go. You got it.
And how?
That's how you know we've known each other forever. We finish each other's sentences.
We finish each other's sandwiches.
Mike Deft is pointing out...
I am a banana.
And how? The Unite beta in Japan was actually fun, says Mike Deft. Half the chat has left the chat after Loki's joke. Thanks for that, Loki. You know how to keep the ratings going. Good job. All right. And the mod bot just triggered on the word whores. So now
we allow whores.
We have now allowed the word whores, so you can freely talk about whores.
We prefer to refer to them as sex workers, Rob.
All right. Anyway, let's move on. I think this next story is kind of interesting. Dar Sakura.
Well, the man, the myth, the legend. Kojima Hideo. The man who gave us Metal Gear. The man who gave us Silent Hill. And more recently has given us Death Stranding. He doesn't like them calling the new release of it a director's cut. This is assuming that there were things that were cut from the movie. From the game that are being put back into the game because he's the director and he said so. No, he says that this is a little bit more. In fact, I'll just read his quote about it. In the game, it is not what was cut, but what was additionally produced that was included. Director's plus. So in my opinion, I don't like to call director's cut. And so, yeah, it's just more content for the game. It's like a special edition. So it's, yeah. So at any rate, calling it a director's cut was more of like a marketing decision. The marketing team did it. They did the same thing for the re-release of Ghosts of Tsushima. I can pronounce words. The director's cut for August 20th. But basically what they have going on, for Death Stranding, quote, director's cut, quote, is that it has new story missions, more combat exploration, a firing range, a racing mode, and 4K HDR options to launch on September 24th, or an upgrade if you have the original. But yeah, Kojima doesn't like it. And we support the decisions of our Lord and Master Kojima.
It is weird to hear somebody so openly defying, like, I don't like what they did to this before the fucking thing even releases. But at the same time, like, I feel like Hideo Kojima can literally do whatever he wants in this industry. There are very few people, I would say Miyamoto is another one. There are very few people in this industry that are allowed to do literally whatever they want. And people will be like, yes, Kojima, yes. You know, people will still eat it up. And it's interesting that he makes the movie comparisons when Death Stranding really is cinematic in so many ways. And some ways has been razzed for not being much of a game. I disagree with that, but I understand that Death Stranding is very cinematic in its ways and that the game part is not necessarily what people look forward to in playing that game, if that makes sense.
Well, and I think it's just his point that calling it a director's cut is a misnomer of sorts.
Yes, yes.
I know, and
it's more special edition or whatever, yeah.
Right, like a director's cut would like be, like, say, the Superman 2 Donner's cut.
Mm.
That's a director's cut.
Right.
Or going back and watching the original run of Blade Runner without the narration over the end, because Harrison Ford hated that.
Now, what would you call watching Legend with the superior Tangerine Dream soundtrack? So that's not really a director's cut. I don't know.
That's more bonus.
All right. Anyway, Tay Plays Games in chat says, I read Kojima's statement, but I was a bit confused. Was he trying to say the additions fundamentally interfered with his creative vision, or was it just semantics?
It was semantics.
I think it was just semantics, but you raise an interesting point. Could you read between the lines here and wonder, did Kojima even want to do this? Or was he kind of asked extremely nicely, maybe not so nicely, to do it? I sort of think Kojima, again, can do whatever he wants. So if they came to him and said, we'd like you to do this, he had every right to say no. But maybe he's like, but it could be more money for my next project, so let's just fucking do it.
Maybe it wasn't necessarily that he didn't want to do it, but it was more of like, hey, we need you to do a PS5 port. And he's like, oh, cool, I'm going to do that, and I'm going to add some more things to the game. And they're like, we're going to put a director's cut on it. He's like, ugh, can you not?
Well, and don't forget that Kojima is talking with Microsoft about a potential deal.
Right. There's that little buzz going around. Right.
Well, don't forget Phil Spencer had the little Kojima Pro figure.
Oh, Microsoft.
Hanging out on his desk.
Microsoft's just, Microsoft is, Phil Spencer is so fucking good. Like,
Why couldn't we have had him for the Sega Saturn?
I'm excited he's in this industry now, and I'm excited he's leading Microsoft. He's so fucking good. All right.
Yeah. Anyway. Although, what I hope is that we get something that is what Silent Hills was supposed to have been.
You know, I was just having this discussion in the car with Shane and Dustin on the drive back from SF last night. We were talking a little bit about, like, the PT demo and how, you know, it just kind of, you know, it's people still talk about the PT demo. Hello, here we go.
You want to know what?
Hmm.
I have a Mac version of it called Punity.
Well, and just the fact, okay, but there's lots of versions of PT because that has inspired people to make all of these clones, knockoffs, emulate, like, name another
with
demo
all the assets
that's had such
exported
an impact.
For this.
What was
yeah,
that?
Well, it had the assets exported for the build that I have. But there's also, I mean, people are still talking about it. We had Boundary Break episodes of it just last year.
Yeah. Well, and my whole thing that, you know, the discussion was how many elements of that maybe ended up in Death Stranding, since they were, you know, they both had Norman Reedus and a lot of the other guests. You know, you kind of wonder how many of the ideas maybe really were in Death Stranding, and we just don't know. It may have been a thing that was in Kojima's original Silent Hill vision, because we didn't get to see much of it, sadly. Now, I'm not saying Death Stranding is like what Silent Hill would have been, no, but you got to wonder how many concepts may have been a part of it.
I think that Death Stranding is far larger in scope than the narrative of Silent Hill.
I think that whole concept of the baby providing guidance and all that, I think there's something there that ties to the Silent Hill concept. Because remember in the PT demo when you've got that, like, really that thing talking to you in the sink and all that stuff.
What, the fetus?
Yes. Like, I think there, I feel like there might be a connection. So
I don't.
Yeah. All right.
I don't at all.
All right.
I think that the PT itself was to be something to build the buzz for Silent Hills. Mm-hmm. I think that what happened in that house probably had nothing to do with what Silent Hills was going to be.
Mm.
And, you know, because it seems like a Kojima thing to do.
All right.
You know?
All right.
Like, I mean, look at Metal Gear Solid 3. What was right in there for?
It's been forever, yeah.
Or was that 2? I don't remember.
Yeah.
It was the one with Raiden in it, where he was pretty, and I liked him, and he ran around naked holding his crotch while the guy yelled, "We need scissors, 62.
Mike Def says that was 2.
That was 2. Okay, right. That was 2. I just, that part will always just stick in my head forever. We need scissors.
All right. Let's move on to our next story here, which we kind of referenced a little bit ago, but Loki?
My bad.
Yeah. So Stadia is going to be giving developers and publishers more of the cut of the sales. So starting October 1st, they're going to receive 85% of the sales revenue. And then the split applies to only the first 3 million of sales. And then it will only be in place until the end of 2023, in which case it'll go back to the current revenue split as it is. On top of that, they're also going to be splitting the Stadia Pro subscription fees as well, assuming that the publisher puts their title into the Stadia Pro lineup, which is that game library that you get, you know, free with your membership. And then based on the engagement with those, they will get a cut of that as well. So it depends. So it's that they're being involved with it, and also the game has to be played by people. You can't just, like, you know, put crappy game in there and just get a cut of it.
Right. There's some people that are reacting to this news going, ooh, she's desperate. But I'm not sure it's really that. I think it's just this is competition kind of playing off a little bit, because now Amazon is in the space. Now, you know, the GeForce and all these other, now Netflix, even though this decision was made before, I'm sure, the Netflix thing came out, maybe they were reading some tea leaves. But I think this is just more
could
about
could this have anything
positioning
to
themselves.
Do with the lawsuit, though, also with, like, say, Apple and that whole thing going on because of the cuts that they're taking from their storefront?
Hard,
they're trying to, like, kinda...
hard to say when you're not in the boardroom, but anything's possible.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So, all right. Let's move on. We got to keep it moving here. We're going to talk about this next story, which I think is really funny. When a company leaks its own game. Let's talk about Nioh, The World Ends With You. How many of you guys are looking forward to that game? Because I know a lot of people have been rediscovering the original World Ends With You game with the Switch
that
port and everything like
that.
That
game was so stylish.
Yeah. Well, now you can play the stylish sequel, Nioh, The World Ends With You, except some folks got to check it out a little bit early. Here's the thing. If you pre-ordered a physical Switch copy on the Square Enix store, the Square Enix store accidentally started sending out digital codes on July 16th. The game's not out until the 27th. So somebody hit the fire button early on those emails. So
oopsie.
But it's kind of hard to, like, A, feel bad for Square Enix. They did it themselves. We're not talking about, like, oh, it got hacked and leaked that way. Nope. They just sent out, and for whatever reason, the codes worked. That you'd think that would be the other thing, is that, okay, the codes just don't work till the 27th, but whoops. Anyway.
Well, the other thing, too, which is kind of weird with that, is, like, typically with digital games on, like, even the Switch storefront, like, you can preload them, but they won't let you play or unlock it until the night. So it's like they whoopsied a few times. They're like, it's not going to be a – just – it's like, fine.
My bad.
It's also important to point out they were getting digital copies of the full game, and it was they're getting physical copies. That's what they pre-ordered. So folks are thinking the digital codes were probably supposed to be for, like, a soundtrack, some bonus DLC, cosmetics, something like that. And oops, all retail codes got
sent out.
Maybe they
send them codes, like reviewer codes, instead of, like, soundtrack codes or something.
So people really could, if they wanted to, they could just keep that digital code they've redeemed and sell their physical edition, and they'll still have access. Nothing's going to – I mean, I guess technically in the rules that you agree to when you sign up for these online things, and this is part of the controversy of digital stores, Square, if they wanted to, could pull access to those codes. Because I've seen that happen with preview and early release and types of things before, is that they pull the codes so they no longer work after a certain day. But I don't know if it would be a good idea for Square to do it. It would depend on probably how many people this affects. Like, if it's only several hundred people, they're probably just going to write it off. They're going to have to. So we'll see. But I think that's hilarious that the company themselves accidentally sent out the game. But these mistakes happen. It's a complicated industry, you guys. Tay plays games in chat, says, it is always hard to feel bad for Square Enix. Well, they are a very big company. That is true. So, all right.
I still think more of the Enix. They should be bringing back some of the old Enix titles, like,
that's,
you know,
right.
Bust a Move.
That's right. No forgiveness for Square Enix until Bust a Move Part 3. Or,
well,
4, I guess. Yeah,
Dance
4.
Summit.
4.
Yeah. Hey, Dance Summit is fun. Don't knock it.
No, I know. But all right. Anyway, since Dark Soccer has brought up some older games, I think it's a good time for an old favorite here at OLR.
And now it's time to travel back to a simpler time, where I'll dive into the vault and pull out a classic and tell you about it. It's time for the classic game of the week.
And what did you pick this week, Darsara?
I picked Sakura Taisen from 1990. This looks like, oh, never mind. Yeah, 1996 for Sega Saturn. And this game is fairly unique, and it was multiple genre combining. And it really was, I mean, something that spawned like several sequels and so much, so many manga. And remember my Cardcaptor Sakura that I have on Dreamcast that came with the plate and the fork and the clock and everything?
Oh, yes.
And the pillowcase? They did a Sakura Taisen for Dreamcast that came with some of the same stuff. And yeah, the music in Sakura Taisen is absolutely great. So it was the first installment created by Hiroe Oji. It came out on the Sega Saturn and then was later ported to Dreamcast and had a remake for PlayStation 2. And Sega defined it as a dramatic adventure game. And what happened is that it was an overlay of three different genres. You had tactical role-playing, you had a dating sim, and a visual novel. So it was set in 1923 during the Taisho era, and it follows this group called the Imperial Combat Review, which is a military unit that fights supernatural threats against Tokyo, and they have a cover as a theater troupe. One of the ensigns of the Imperial Japanese Navy, Ogami Ichiro, was assigned to lead the Flower Division, which was all women with magical abilities. And they use steam-powered armor, so it's sort of like early 20th century steampunk-ish magical Japan. That seems pretty okay. So the concept for it began in 1990. The team that Hiroe had started working on his concept and then got approval by Sega, and then they brought in some pretty good writers, character designers, and composers. Like, the composer was Tanaka Kohei, and among some of this stuff that he did, he did some stuff anime. He did the arrangement opening and ending for Dragon Ball. He did some stuff for Patlabor. You know, I'm talking about like the awesome 80s anime. He did stuff for Bastard. He did stuff for Spirit of Wonder, Dragon Half. You know, so Tenchi Muyo GXP he also did. I'm trying to think of some more recent stuff. He did the Sakura Taisen animation that just came out in 2020. Hayate, the Combat Butler, if anyone else has watched that. He did a bunch of full-length movies. So I'm just saying he's got a lot of good... He did the music for Gravity Rush and Alundra. So anyway, I just wanted to point out the music was... It was very good. So going back into this, like I said, it's cross-genre. So you have the two gameplay modes. One is an adventure mode, and the other is your battle mode. The adventure mode is between these different periods where you navigate the Grand Imperial Theater and interact with characters. And then the battle mode is a turn-based battle system on a tiled grid, kind of, you know, it's tactics. It's a tactics-style game. And so your progress is saved at the end of each episode. So the episodes go like you're watching an anime. They have each different episode as you're going through the story. You have an adventure mode. You can walk through the theater. I kind of thought it was a little bit like Danganronpa, a little bit for the walking around. And then you have these critical conversations that you can have with the Flower Division and the supporting characters. And they give you a time limit for you to put in your input. So depending on how you respond, the character may respond positively or negatively, and it affects your future interactions. And then there's also... you can hold, like, your cursor over the character's portrait to hear their inner monologue, which is fairly interesting. And then, of course, each of the main heroines have their own different quirk that you have to remember so that you can raise their trust level with you, so dating sim. For the battle mode, you have each unit has their turn, and each has two actions. You can do two actions during your turn. So you have attack, defend, move, and death blow, which is a one-hit kill. You also have some charging. You also have healing, which those are done to, like, the unit. And if you lose, you can rematch. And it's got animated cutscenes and musical numbers and all kinds of fun stuff. So the game in and of itself was... partly proposed by way of tabletop role-playing games. Hiroi and the team called them Sakura 1 and Sakura 2, which were the strategy elements came into the game from this, and as well as the story came in. And they were also, you know, took a lot of influence from the Fire Emblem series, you know, with the turn-based combat using that grid. And then once... it was, you know, they had a full idea together. They, you know, the project would make a great game. He proposed Sakura to different companies, and none of them was interested in it. And so he put the game aside. And then the vice president of Sega at the time, Iri Maijiri Suichiro, had contacted him about the possibility of doing a game with a mascot for, you know, to develop a mascot for the Sega Saturn. And Hiroi had some different suggestions, but it was eventually, this is what led to Sakura Taisen coming out on Saturn. So at any rate, it has a lot of things in common. It basically is a bishoujo game, meaning pretty girl, you know, as opposed to bishonen for pretty boy. But you have, yeah, anyway, going back. So there were lots of things in the battle scenes were that were influenced by TV of an earlier era, like the Kamen Rider series and Ultraman, by having, like, the larger mecha fight. And so the art design, now going into the art design on this one, the art had some, there were some placeholders on there, but it was finally, fully designed and finalized by Fujishima Kosuke, who did Oh My Goddess or Amagami Sama. You know, I'd say the anime probably had a lot more popularity in the 90s, but his work was like the glue that held the project together. And so he came up with all kinds of outfits and everything for them. And then the supporting cast and general animation was done by Matsubara Hidenori. So they really had, you know, they also did a little bit of the basis for their general style, like for the uniforms, sort of loosely based off of early British soldier uniforms a little bit. And now Hiroi was going to do this in Meiji era Japan, but it looked like it was going to be better to do it during the Taisho era, which is when Japan was integrating Western culture more its own, hence the designs of the uniforms. So, and also, though, in the original draft, it was supposed to be a lot darker because it brought into account the Great Kanto earthquake and then the breaking down of the Taisho period, but they threw that out totally and just kept certain elements that were going to, you know, just keep it a little bit more light and lighthearted. And so, I mean, basically, that's it. It had some great voice actors. I mean, first of all, Sakura was voiced by Yokoyama Chisa. She's been voice acting, though, since 87, like Black Magic M66. That was, like, one I really liked back then. Robot Carnival. I'm trying to think of something that more people might have heard her in. Rōjin Z. Miki Momo, Golf Force. She was Murugu in Yu Yu Hakusho. Hime-chan no Ribbon. She did some stuff in there. Anyway, you know, they got some pretty great voice talent in there. They have had some singers who are also doing some of the voice acting roles because they had to be able to sing as well. You know, a couple of the actor who is actually Ogami, the main guy, had almost no voice acting. He was in training for a voice actor, and they took him in, and he did really well, and he was the last character to be cast. So, yeah, I'm gonna get a little bit past some of the back end on this. It had a great soundtrack, the Sakura Taisen soundtrack, Steam Gramophone, 51 tracks from the game published by BMG Japan. And then there was the vocal collection, also done by BMG. And then the 2003 remake was released by Avex Mode. So yeah, for releases, it was a special Sega presentation in 1995 for release in April 1996 for the Sega Genesis. Not Genesis, why am I saying Genesis? The Sega Saturn. And it was dubbed a dramatic adventure. The port for Dreamcast came out May 25th, 2000, with a version for iMode mobile devices. And of course, that was the special edition that had also plates and saucers and all kinds of goodies. It had Windows ports for Windows ME and Windows 2000, Windows 95 and Windows 98 as well. It had a sequel on PSP. There was also the DVD-ROM version out for Windows 2000, XP, and Vista. ASCII Core did some guidebooks for them, but it never did get an English release. Hiroi really wanted it to be released in the US, but there is a translation patch out for Saturn, as we can see from the playthrough that we have going on.
I think we're seeing on Twitch. Yeah,
it's a fan translation. So there was a PS2 remake. It was a 3D remake called Sakura Taisen in Hot Blood, and it was announced as part of the Sakura Taisen World Project, which was an effort to bring it to a new audience. And they did lots of reworks. They changed the functions in the story mode part of it. They brought back all of the original actresses, recorded new voice acting for it. And there you go. It came out in February 22nd, 2003. First Prince came out with a special DVD that had a documentary dealing with the development process of Sakurai Taisen and mobile tie-in stuff, mini games, other stuff came out, but they were going to have access to B content through a direct cable connection, but because of driver capacity issues, they did a password system instead. The game was wonderfully received. It got a 33 out of 40 from Famitsu, a 35 out of 40 for the PS2 version. It did get a couple of English language reviews, including a Game Fan, Dreamcast Magazine had their own review of it. The sales were amazing. He promised that it would sell 200,000 units, and it actually sold 205,270 units in the first week.
Hmm.
So it is considered to be one of the best-selling titles of all time. It's like 54th as of 2003 for the remake. The only thing that outsold it in its time frame was Star Ocean Till the End of Time by Enix and Dynasty Warriors 4 from Toei. That's with that that version. So it also had other releases. There were three sequels: Sakurai Taisen 2, Thou Shalt Not Die for Saturn; Sakurai Taisen 3 is Paris Burning, which makes me laugh for other reasons.
Right.
Because, yeah. Sakurai Taisen 4, Fallen Love Maidens for the Dreamcast. That's the one that came with this stuff, by the way. There's supposed to be, there's a fourth sequel for PS2 called Sakura Wars 5, Farewell My Lovely. It was published as Sakura Wars So Long My Love outside of Japan. It had anime, manga, character CDs. It had some of the characters showed up in Project X Zone on 3DS. There's the OAV series, Sakurai Taisen, The Gorgeous Blooming Cherry Blossoms. Studio Madhouse was behind, it was co-produced by Red Company that did Sakurai Taisen, Madhouse, and Studio Matrix. And it basically expanded upon the first game. It had a few more things behind the scenes. And there was, of course, the manga that was serialized in monthly magazine Zed. And then it has since been released in Tankobon afterwards. And so published by Kodansha. And that's it.
That is
everything. Not everything you should know. But it's a lot. Sakurai Taisen is one of the ones I've been holding off on for a while because so much.
But it's also interesting because I would bet a lot of listeners out there, I mean, I'm sure plenty do know about this series, but I bet there's a lot that don't, and just how much of this there has been. And, kind of as you pointed out, it's really kind of unique to the Japanese gaming audience because they really have resisted, putting this out for our localized audience for some time, and it took fan translations and stuff to make that happen. But obviously this is a huge franchise, just maybe not here in this country.
And musicals, according to
yes
to Ramen, there is Shin Sakurai Taisen, and I wasn't going to go too much into what else the voice actress had done, but the voice cast is really, really top. I mean, even this guy, for this having been his first role to play the main character, he did really well. I thought it was great.
All right. So there it is. Your classic game of the week, Sakurai Taisen or Sakura Wars. All right.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Actually, quickly, before we get into rapid fire news, I remembered I left something out of my gaming week, and I thought this would be kind of funny. Since we were out doing Pokemon Go yesterday, we had taken the BART over there, and we'd ridden, which is the train, basically, in the Bay Area. So
Bay Area, rapid transit.
Exactly. And so we had parked at Concord, that area. So we actually ended up going over to the Concord Mall to eat, and we went to Round 1. So I haven't been to Round 1 since, before the pandemic. So I saw a lot of folks playing DDR and that stuff, which I wasn't going to get on there with a mask and everything. People play DDR and a mask and all that stuff now. And I'm like, I don't have the stamina for it at you know, and so forth. But there's a 2DX machine in the corner. They had the latest one. It was the Bistro. I don't know what
the cooking one
because it has a little cooking mini game at the end. So I just sat in the corner and played that
Bistrover.
That's it. Then thank you, Bistrover. I sat in the corner and played that all night. Now I was definitely grandpa on the machine because I was like, I'm gonna play songs from Third Style, Jamie. I played the Safari. I did.
That'd be me.
But I did try.
But do you agree the best version of Safari is the original version and not the fast one?
Yes, the original is much better. Fast one was what was on the machine. But I did unlock through that minigame, I unlocked some song that I tried. It was a 9-star song, though. So I flopped. I did as my last stage and I flopped. It was a really good song. I played some of the new songs and I was into them, the ones that I picked. So I tried to mix up my classics with some contemporary stuff. But yeah, I thought some of you might get a kick out of that. I played 2DX this week. And it's actually where I was at the arcade and I played nothing but 2DX. Shane was playing the one that looks like the washing machine where you hit the edge on the outside and it's all bright. I can't remember the name of the guys.
My.
Is that it? No, I thought it had a different name. Is there another game like that?
No.
Waka. It's Waka.
Oh, Waka?
That's what he was playing.
I like My.
And like Groove Coaster was playing that a lot. But oh, Jason says you can see your play history on the EMU's portal. I need to log in and set up my card and all that stuff. I really need Roseville to get their round one up and going. I would play more 2DX in the arcade if
Roseville... It's been, kind of coming soon for a long time now.
Like, I understand. You know, COVID fucked everything up. Like, I get it. So I'm not like, why isn't it out? But I'm still like, oh, hurry up and open because I want to play so bad. So, one of these days. Let's see. What was I was trying to think along with the music games. Oh, you know what's interesting? A friend of mine here locally bought a Theatrhythm machine and has it in his house now. And I want to go over and play it so bad because I love Theatrhythm is one of my favorite music cabs because the DS game is so good.
No Dance Rush?
Theatrhythm was lots of fun.
I love Theatrhythm. The arcade version is really cool. And he has it in his house. He had the money and setting up a little arcade in his spare room. And he really, because he's a huge Final Fantasy fan. So he really liked it too. So I'm hoping to go over there and play that. So that'll be fun. I don't know if he has it hooked up on EMUs or it's not EMUs, but you know, a comparable system. I don't know if he has it because I have a card for that. So anyway. Bobby Blackwell says, I have considered getting a used 2DX cabinet for my arcade. They are lots of fun. They are big and make a lot of noise. The only problem is at round one, everything makes noise. And so sometimes it's really hard to hear. But I
have a hard time there.
Well, if I think ahead, you can plug in headphones into these newer machines. But I don't plan right for this stuff. So my bad. All right. Anyway, let's move on. Let's get into some other rapid fire news and quickly talk about some other things going on in the industry. Loki.
Yeah. So like we've talked about some of the different Bethesda games and stuff coming out and different exclusives and timed exclusives. Well, one of the other games that was also supposed to be exclusive to PlayStation 5, Ghostwire Tokyo, has been delayed to 2022. But not a huge surprise. And, you know, obviously COVID did play a big part of that. So we'll just have to wait longer. It's fine. apparently there's going to be an update to Android with Android 12 that'll actually allow you to play games as they download. So they said some titles that support that, you'll be able to play within seconds. Which is pretty cool, especially for some of the larger download games.
And if you're downloading in a spotty cell signal area or something as opposed to Wi-Fi. So.
Yeah. They said, for example, you know, like a 127 megabyte game can be played after about 20% of it's downloaded.
That's getting very common these days, too, because, you know, some PC and I'm sure Mac stuff, you know, is kind of like that. And then Microsoft Xbox is doing that stuff, too, where it's like when you download Game Pass games, you probably only be a third of the way into download and it's ready to run. So it's kind of nice. We like that.
Yeah.
All right. Darsakra.
So it seems like almost every week I have something about someone found a really good copy of this old game and it sold for a bunch of money. That happened again. Now Super Mario 64 is the world's most expensive video game. It just sold for $1.56 million, which broke the record set by The Legend of Zelda 2 days before. And it was again put up by Heritage Auctions. And it was purchased after 16 bids. And this particular copy was, you know, nice, new in the box, really pretty. Yeah. But also the game has significance because it was, the first, you know, real 3D Mario game. And it was kind of weird because I think it signaled a transition away from cartridge based gaming. Because it wasn't too long that CD and DVD and then Blu-ray replaced everything. Although we had our moment with the Giga Disc. Good job, Sega.
True.
Thumbs up. So there you go. It sold for a lot of money. It was in near perfect condition. It had a plastic case and was still factory sealed and shrink wrapped, and it rated a 9.8 or an A++ rating on the WADA scale. So it was practically undamaged. It was near perfect. And they said they found no notable imperfections. So good deal. All right. And moving forward, now we're getting into more Mario and a little bit more luxury. Now, I thought that I had my eyes set really high when I wanted my Hermes Apple Watch. Still kind of want one, at least want the band. But now Tag Heuer, which is like one of the top luxury watchmakers in the world, has a limited edition Super Mario watch. It's a smartwatch. And its price is $2,150.
Sheesh.
Yeah, actually, I take that back. Because there's a typo on this. It shouldn't be dollars. That's 2,150 pounds. So it's even more in the dollars. Yeah. So it looks cool. It's got a red band. It comes with a nice case, you know. And you'd pretty much, I think, get like lifetimes of repairs on it. Because Tag Heuer is like, yeah. It when they talk about Swiss precision, this is some fucking Swiss precision from a Swiss watchmaker. Thumbs. So anyway, go buy me one. Thank you. The end. I still want my Hermes.
I'm going to sneak something in here real quick before we get to world release dates, because it was mentioned in our intro tonight by Jason. But one other announcement that came out on July 15th has to do with Path of Exile. You know, that game has been around since 2010. That's like an 11-year-old game at this point, kind of the free-to-play answer to Diablo 3. Path of Exile had a new expansion announced called Expedition, and it's out very soon. It's out, I believe, on the 23rd was the day for that. So it's coming out very soon, and it's going to be doing some different things to the game. So you have to excavate relics in the game, and you are doing this to make peace with new merchants in the world. But there are also new support and skill gems that are going to be added to the game. So that means you'll get to see some new skills. There's a skill called Spectral Helix and something called Explosive Concoction. Also, and this is also very interesting, I think, because this might be a reason to revisit Path of Exile if you haven't done it in a while. Balance changes as well as a rework of the first act is coming as well. And then I think they're talking about the flask system is also going to be changed. So this is some pretty hefty changes in advance of Path of Exile 2, which is still a thing that's happening. I'd be curious to check this out. I think it's the 23rd on PC and I think the 28th on consoles. So you can check that out in the coming week. Because remember, Path of Exile is a free-to-play type of game. So pretty cool. All right. Moving on, let's travel around the world and check out some release dates.
Yeah, so in the U.S., we've got a few things coming out this week, starting with Akiba's Trip, Hellbound, and Debriefed, coming out on PC, Nintendo Switch, and PlayStation 4. We have Ender Lilies, Quietus of the Nights, and that's on PlayStation 4. Cotton Reboot on Nintendo Switch and PlayStation 4.
I want it.
Chris Tales on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X, and Stadia. Death's Door on PC, Xbox One, and Xbox Series X. Pokemon Unite, also on Nintendo Switch this week. Last Stop on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series X. And last but not least, Orcs Must Die 3 on PC, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Xbox Series X.
All right, going to Japan and looking at some of the releases there. On the Switch this week, we have Sengoku Kohime, Otome Kenran Sengoku Imaki comes out in a regular and limited edition this week for the Nintendo Switch. And it's kind of a slower week in Japan this week, as the only other release we have here is a Renai Kari Chamimashita is out as well on the Switch this week. Trying to see if things are a little more exciting on the PlayStation 4 or 5. We do have Utowari Umono Zan 2 is out in a regular and a premium edition this week on the PlayStation 5. And the PlayStation 4 also has that same game coming out on that. But that is really it. It's somewhat of a slower week. I think last week there was a ton in Japan, so it's a little slower this week, but still some stuff.
Well, we have some stuff for the UK. On the 20th, we have Blasphemous Deluxe Edition. Chris Tales also on the 20th. On the 21st, Raiden 4. I love the Raiden games. The Sims Cottage Living. Akiba's Trip Hellbound and Debriefed on the 23rd. Further on the 23rd, we also have Cooking Mama Cookstar. They're still Cooking Mama. Lost Words.
Is that the one that mines your Bitcoin on your on the Switch? Remember that whole wacky thing? I think it came out that actually wasn't true, but still, this is hilarious headlines. Sorry, Jamie, I had to.
Well, and
it
then
up.
PETA's going to make another version of it, whatever. Urban Trial Tricky. The Keep also comes out. We have Necromunda Hired Gun. And Blue Fire. Blue Fire looks kind of cool.
All right.
Thus East All. Sethini.
We have some more stories, and then we'll get to your emails, if there are any, but or some of your Discord posts and other things.
Or some drag talk.
Your chat comments as well. We'll get to all that in just a moment. But first, some more stories. Loki.
Yes, so everybody's still frustrated with the Nintendo Switch Joy-Con controllers drifting. So there has been a new kind of fix proposed online if you don't want to send your Joy-Cons into Nintendo to have them repaired, using some cardboard and basically throwing that in there. I think it's on top of the battery and basically applying some more pressure to the actual joystick itself to prevent it from drifting. So I'm probably going to try that at some point, because I know I've replaced the analog sticks in most of the Joy-Cons that we have, although I broke one of them doing that, so that was fun. But I still have a few to fix, and so I mean, it's worth a shot, I guess. But apparently it's been working for people.
It's interesting that Valve was actually asked about that Steam Deck thing they're doing. Do the joysticks drift? Somebody actually fucking asked them that, and I thought that was a very hilarious question.
How would they know? They wouldn't know, like, until, because it's not something that would appear until like months later.
They wouldn't tell anybody anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Our joysticks are garbage. You know. Yeah.
I think it's also Nintendo was asked that about the OLED model, and they declined to comment. Like, they're
right,
not, they're not,
they ain't done shit.
Well, because
they haven't done
because a class action is either happening already or it's going to happen. And so Nintendo's not going to say a goddamn thing about it. That's
well,
why.
Yeah, they can't do it. They're not, obviously not. It obviously it is. And it's,
well, and also
yeah,
but for them,
Joy-Con.
For them to comment on it with the OLED would be for them to acknowledge it exists on the regular one. Although I don't disagree with you. It's probably going to be a problem on the OLED, well, but that's the real issue. For them to say, yes, the OLED is fine, is in also kind of conversely saying it's not fine, and that's just going to add fire to the class action. That's why they won't answer it.
Well, yeah, and the worst part about it, too, is, like, even on, was it the, was it the Switch Lite? Those drift as well, and that you can't replace those.
Ooh.
Only you can't, you know, replace them easily. You have to take it apart or, you know, send it to Nintendo, so.
Yeah. Oh, boy. All right. Until then, I love the chat is lighting up about cardboard. Bobby Blackwolf says, Nintendo Labo to the rescue. There you go. Since Nintendo just said, you know, fuck Labo at this point, you can repurpose it there to fix your Joy-Cons. Perfect. Orange Wright in chat says, cardboard, it can fix Joy-Cons and 2DX controllers.
DDR machines.
Do you remember when folks would have to shave down the keys on their 2DX controllers to get them to work better? I remember that was a thing.
Hey,
that was the best part of the US
still have
release.
Cardboard.
Yeah.
In my 2DX controllers in that closet.
The best part of the US Beatmania release was those controllers. Everybody
they
wanted those
nice.
Controllers because they were so much better, even though they didn't really change that much, but they fixed the sticky key problem. Yeah, it's crazy.
Hey, Rob.
Huh?
I still have both of mine.
Oh, that's nice. That's good. My Beatmania controller should be around somewhere. But
I've got two Japanese ones and two US ones.
That's nice. That's awesome.
And I still have an official 5-key controller.
Oh, fine.
And an off-market 5-key controller.
I wish we
And
could,
a poppin' music controller.
I wish we could revisit this stuff on home console, but you know, Konami.
I can't find my copy of Para Para. I have my biscuits. I don't have my game.
I'm sure you could find a way to play it. All right. Some other announcements from this week. Like we said it earlier in the show, it was a busy week. We had some announcements from Elgato because more and more people are getting into streaming and influencing and that sort of thing. And I was talking about this a little bit with Bobby on our call tonight, but, there's even whole sections at stores like Best Buy that are dedicated to, so you want to be an influencer and some of the tech equipment that you need for that. Well, no, actually, I'm going to.
Which I promptly skipped that section and went to.
It's important I reword this. That they say you need. You don't need anything. As you need drive. You need habit. You need those are the things you need. But
you do kind of need a computer.
If you have a phone. There's other ways to do stuff. It just depends on what you want to do. You don't necessarily like, and that's the thing about like the Best Buy and these things. It's not just about Twitch streaming. Maybe you want to do makeup tutorials for YouTube. Maybe you want to film sketch comedy. Maybe you want to do the Tic Tac. Is that what the kids are calling it? The Tic Tacs? You want to be a Tic Tac star? That's all along with this, too. So anyway, Elgato is kind of really trying to make itself like the community like for streamers. So they're releasing a lot of this stuff that's branded for this. And they did a lot of announcements this week. They announced a new mic arm. That's like $100 that'll make your mic cable transparent and all that stuff by hiding it inside the arm. They announced a new version of the Stream Deck with customizable faceplates. Woo! So you can pop them on and off and change them. Sure.
I do want the new Stream Deck, but mostly because I'm using the Mini.
Yeah. One of the other announcements they made, though, and I do think this is interesting, is their own new webcam. So an Elgato-branded webcam. And what I think is interesting about, so they're calling it the face cam. And what's interesting about this is it's taking cues from why a lot of people buy the really expensive $500, $600 cameras and then hook them up as webcams on their computer, even though that's not what they're really for. So what they're trying to do, it's not 4K, so it is missing that. But through this Elgato software, which we have to remember is also a big part of what Elgato does, is all the software to support what it does. Is that through the camera hub, you can do contrast, exposure, white balance. You can format and like the lighting and the way it's reading and all that stuff. You can make it kind of look like a really expensive camera through like the software and through the face cam. So kind of interesting, although it should be noted it has to be plugged in your system directly. It doesn't seem to work through a hub. That's what a lot of the early reviews are saying. You need USB-C for the high speed. So something to look at there. I think it's interesting though. It's $200, but it's a higher end webcam. So, Yeah, I mean, I'd look in. I don't know how well they'd run on the. Well, no, it's just a camera, so it should run fine as long as the software works on the Mac. But I would consider getting one for the studio, so it'd be interesting. Bobby in chat says I stream in 720p, so it's fine. Oh, talking about like the whole 4K and all that. Yeah,
yeah. Unless you're doing like full face stuff, like you know, on YouTube or something like that, you know. But even then, you'd probably have a DSLR anyway. So for most things, it's going to be fine. You're not going to be 4K shrunken down to like a tiny little thing in the corner.
I know people that use 4K cameras and it looks great. It looks really good. Like, not going to lie. But it's probably not. I would say you'd probably get more value out of that if you double it up. Like, you're using it as like not just your webcam, but you do other kind of shoots with it too.
I'm using a 4K camera.
Your phone.
I'm using my phone.
Yeah. So
it actually, the quality 4K, is even better because I paid for the app for to link it up to OBS and it looks even better because it'll do it in full 4K on OBS. I mean, my streaming isn't that high, but it will do it.
Mm-hmm. But even though Discord, you know, squishes it down just because that's the nature of how we have to record it. If you were sending me a 4K image, my system wouldn't be able to keep up. So it still looks good.
I'm using one called Camo Studio to do for Discord.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's 720p, but it's HD. It looks good. It's 30 frames per second, which is fine for Discord.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Faces at people.
Well, speaking of new releases, I think this one's great, Dark Sakura.
You know what? I completely didn't open the story. My bad.
That's all right.
I need one.
You want to tell us about it?
No, I'm going to go buy one now. Bye.
You want competition on the pre-orders.
So LG is doing a great brand new TV that, you know, everyone's going to need it. Everyone's going to want this. It's a 17-inch 4:3 CRT television. It is the LG Serie SERIE 1. It's classic CRT. It has a Famicom hooked up to it in the picture.
Oh, that's awesome. See, finally, somebody coming to the rescue of all of these old CRTs, which if you don't know what that is, that talks about the tube that's inside those old televisions. That's what they have, the fat backs that are very heavy. Those are all
because of the CRT.
Yep. Which all your old arcade machines had them. All our old retro systems ran on them. And so, you know, as those CRTs are dying and nobody makes them anymore until now, you know, they're very hard to replace. And some people don't, especially with retro.
Rob,
what?
This story is from 2010.
What? Who put this in for this week?
I went back and looked at the date.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah.
All right. Sorry, guys. Somebody put it in.
I guess they're sold out. Yes?
Yeah, well, the webpage is gone.
Somebody put it in the pool for this week, so that's an oops on our part. How did that get dug up all these years later? Well, that happens. You know what? Old news circulates sometimes and comes back up.
I'm sure I can find something else to
talk
about.
I'm sure somebody must have pulled it from social media or something like that.
Well, Ubisoft is doing a brand new Tom Clancy game.
Yeah, see, so not to throw anybody under the bus, but Dark Tetsuya posted it on our forums or on our little thing and says, I came across this on Twitter. So it's still floating around right now.
I tell people on Facebook, on Twitter, on everything. Check the date.
I'm with Tay. Announced in 2010, but due to global supply chain issues, it'll be released next month. That
now
I believe.
I'm mad because I want one.
No,
that
I
believe.
A Nintendo TV. Maybe it is with a Famicom attached to it, but yeah.
All right. Things happen. And so, you know what? Again, if it was making the rounds on Twitter.
Here's some really notable news.
Hmm.
Among Us has been translated into Irish Gaelic.
Oh, that's random, but cool.
Yeah.
All right. I think we have another story here, and I think this is Loki's.
Yeah, so we can, I guess, talk a little bit about how Mario is got this unique version that's been donated now to a museum. So there was a rare PC port of Super Mario Bros. 3 that was being worked on by id Software, or I guess in this case, it's Ideas from the Deep. And it never came to fruition, but they did put a demo out, or like start working on a demo. And now it's in the Strong National Museum of Play, which is in Rochester, New York. But yeah, it says the individual who donated it was a game developer, and it was something that they didn't expect to see, but something that at least they heard was rumored to be a thing. What's interesting, though, is since the development didn't go forward with it, they used the effort that they put into it and I guess maybe even some of the code or whatever to develop to Commander Keen.
I knew it. I knew the first time I played that Commander Keen, I'm like, this is just Super Mario Bros. 3. But like, you know, and this is back in the day. But is it, you know, and again, the Mario PC thing isn't new news because, again, that I know. The video was out, you know, several years ago when this was first brought up and everything. But the news here is that now other people will get to see it in a museum. It's not just this, you know, kind of secret thing that is like one video of it exists that was put out there. That's just kind of cool. But like and even if you go back and watch that video now, you hear so much of like Commander Keen in it. It's so interesting.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Yeah. SJ100 Matt says, I'm like an hour from this museum now. I'll have to go there at some point. Yeah. Give us the scoop. Tell us what it's all about.
I made a bad dad joke.
Yes, I saw. And for more of that, you can join our chat. All right.
Yeah, join our chat.
No One Special in chat says, Commander Keen was one of my first Steam purchases in 2013. Interesting. All right. Let's move on. I got one more story for you guys, and then we're going to wrap up for the night. And that has to do with a classic game called Chip's Challenge. And Chip's Challenge, a lot of folks know from, I think it was in like an old Windows expansion thing.
Yeah, it was like a Windows.
Did you do that for a classic game while I was out once?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we had to have, yeah.
It was a Windows game collection or something like that. I can't remember what it was called, but I had it.
I remember there was like a Windows 95 or one of those like a game expansion thing, yeah. Well, there's a console port coming for this game. It's coming for the Super Nintendo and I believe the Genesis as well. Yeah, a company called Retro Room Games is remaking this game.
The Microsoft Entertainment Pack.
That's what it was. That's it. It was originally on the Lynx in 1989. I knew it was like an early game for one of those handhelds.
I think I have a copy for Lynx.
I think everybody has a copy of this game somewhere. And again,
for Lynx, though.
I've mentioned this on the show before. The guy who originally made this game is actually somebody I know through other like gaming store. He lives here. So I need to, not here, but he lives in the area. So I need to have him on the show at some point. Because now, especially that this is news, I'd be very curious to get his take on all this thing. So maybe I'll have to do that. I'll have to send him an email or a message and see if he's willing to come on the show. Let's see. This is going to, of course, the Chips Challenge had the re-release on Steam in 2015, and then there was a Chips Challenge 2 as well. Now you can get a new PAL or NTSC format, Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis version of this. There is a box, an instruction manual, just like the way games used to be, and then $49.99 if you want to get the box, the instructions, and all that good stuff. $24.99 if you just want the cart by itself, which I think is an interesting option and a way to do it. So they're still making Super Nintendo games in the year 2021. How about that? And a classic at that. Pretty cool. All right. Mm. Any other old ass games you want to see ported to an old ass system?
Maybe.
Dr. Susia says they gave it away on Steam. I have it in my collection. I remember playing it as Abandonware, but I really like it. Yeah. So it's a fun game. It's a classic. All right, let's get to our next segment, which is the Listener Roundtable. So every week we invite your questions via our chat room over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. And we also appreciate your emails over at participate@orangeloungeradio.com is the place to send your emails. So we'd like to welcome that now, except I don't think we have any emails this week, right?
Nope.
Well, that's unfortunate. You should send us more emails, but that's all right. I understand. Usually when we don't get any emails, it's an excuse for Dark Soccer and I to talk about Drag Race.
I'm still behind.
I don't think I have a lot to say.
Borrow your...
You do. I will say, this current season, this All-Star 6, is, you know, for as much shit as it got for being on Paramount Plus as opposed to VH1, I think I understand now why they did this season, because it's a really good season. It's probably the best All-Star since 2. I mean, ask me again when it's over, because it could have a shitty ending, like All-Stars 3. Although, I love the queen that won All-Stars 3. We all hate how that last episode went down. We all know it just made everything look bad.
It was cringy.
I think it took away from that queen's win, which is unfortunate. But anyway, so ask me when All-Star 6 is over. But so far, it's on track to be one of like the better seasons of All-Stars. So you'll have to check it out. All right. We'll make that quick discussion tonight. Let's talk about other stuff. How about last-minute stories, if you have any?
Yep, I do. So Take-Two is removing some old Grand Theft Auto mods using DMCA takedown notices.
This showed up on our Discord, yeah.
Yeah, so they're doing that on ModDB. There's several pretty big and yet pretty old mods, like, for example, GTA Liberty City, which was a total conversion of Vice City that brought Liberty City from GTA 3 into the Vice City engine. GTA Underground, which merged, I guess, several of the maps from different games together. And those had received different takedown notices. Basically, it sounds like that they're going to re-release these games, is what it sounds like to me. But they've tried to do this in the past with other things. There was that whole thing where they reverse engineered the code for, I think it was Vice City or Grand Theft Auto 3. And basically, rebuilt the games and ported them to different things. So they had taken it down at one time, but since none of the code was original, it was all based off of like kind of figuring it out that, you know, they really couldn't do anything, so they put that back online. But yeah, this isn't the first time that they've tried to swing that around. But I mean, this stuff's been on the internet forever. It's probably not going to go away.
All right.
Not on ModDB.
So I'm going to do something a little different here that I haven't done in a very long time, and maybe you can consider this a pilot of sorts for a particular feature here on the show to come back. I'm going to do this live, but somebody wanted to call in and talk to us tonight, and I think that is a lovely idea. So I would like to welcome to the show tonight our voiceover man, Mr. Jason, is with us tonight. Hi, Jason.
One of the few times that I get more than 13 seconds to opine endlessly.
Are you going on cam tonight or no?
I did not think about it. No.
For the sake of time, no. Then let me go back. Okay, well, that's going to... All right, that's fine. That's the joy of doing this live, is that you have all that other stuff. All right, that's all right. We'll figure it out. Hi, so what is on your mind? Yes, I
hello!
And the listeners need to understand, you thanklessly do the intro, the outro, and all that stuff every week here on the show. So you know what? If you've got something to say, well, goddammit, I'm going to make sure you get to come in here and say it, because, you know, you do so much for OLR, and I really hope people understand that OLR really wouldn't happen the way it does if it wasn't for you. So
yeah, I absolutely appreciate that, and am always willing to throw in however possible, and a lot of my participation has been exactly that. It's like, hey, I want to see this thing better, so boom, let's do that. I wanted to talk about a theme. Like, a lot of the intros I do are typically just for fun, and I tend to avoid the headline because the headline is the most obvious thing. You're going to spend the most time on it. Everybody's heard about it. I don't need to use my time in that, so let's do something a little bit different. Mm-hmm. This week is the exactly as I said for E3, last month, the very quiet intro, making the joke about how I don't like repeating myself, which is a 100% true thing about myself. E3's happening. Well, completely unsurprising news of the week. But like the theme of this night that was kind of running around my head has been really interesting too, because we talk the continual evolution of gaming platforms and systems and everything else, and our particular arrangement on it. you, Rob, you said the very same thing that applies to me. I work from home. If I commute, it's me driving. I am intensely interested in the Steam Deck, but I don't know where it fits in my life. Because my Switch is generally docked. I don't take it with me when I go somewhere because I'm the driver.
Same. I'm with you. Obviously, yeah, we're on the same page there. It's like I don't do a lot. The most portable gaming I do is when I'm flying, when I'm on airplanes. When was the last time I got on a plane here in the year 2021? It's been a long time. Now, I am planning to attend Dragon Con. That is still on the table. As a vaccinated individual, I know what my risks are. I don't have children. I'm not worried that if I were to somehow catch COVID during all this, you know, again, being vaccinated, I'm going to be fine. I don't have any kids to pass it to. I plan to hang out with other vaccinated individuals at Dragon Con. I'm going to cut back on some of the big, big stuff that usually happens. But anyway, my point is I'm going out there. I do plan to fly. That's the only time I'll probably actually play the Switch not in docked mode.
And to sink multiple hundreds of dollars in for, not a one-off use, but by no means a regular use, is a heck of an investment to make in that kind of a situation.
Yeah.
And so, like, as I've gotten more and more into big daddy businessman pants, it frustrates me to have the adult mentality about it, that I want to know what Steam's expectations are. And I think, like, this is why journalists, non-investing journalists, getting in investor calls has been such a big thing. I want to know what their targets are, because the actual number of people that I expect to buy the Steam Deck at a given price point, being offset with how much of a certain SKU they produce, if they're taking a loss on the hardware, which they do because they have, you know, they have their cut of all of the gobs and gobs of software they sell. Like, I want to know where their expectation is in order to expect the longevity of this device, because it is a subset of a subset. PC gamers have PCs. Some people families, multiple kids, all this kind of stuff. There's a place for playing it on TV in a big group, playing it on the TV when the computer's otherwise in use, school children, for example, those sorts of things. But that's a subset. And the second subset is people that don't already have consistent means of accessing something. Those people that today would go to a library, which isn't conducive to gaming, a LAN center, which is, but is less, you know, less available around the U.S. and around the world. It's the target seems so small, but it is such a compelling idea.
You know, I do really like the concept of that it's basically like especially in this day and age where we live in now, where it's impossible to get new graphics cards and some of these things. I kind of like that it's almost like a entry-level PC of sorts. Like, I almost wonder if the Steam Deck wouldn't have a purpose as being a kid's computer to do their homework on, a relatively cheap way of doing that. I mean, okay, yeah, you have, you could get a really cheap Chromebook to do a lot of that, I'm sure. But I like this as kind of like the next, like, we all know, like, you get what you pay for with a $100 laptop. You get a $100 laptop, you're going to have the web, Skype, you're not really going to play games on it, right? I like this as kind of like a middle ground where it's like, and you can play quite a few games too on this. It may not be top of the line, it may not be the biggest graphics fidelity, but it kind of works as like a basic PC for a college kid or a high school kid.
Absolutely.
I think that is very fascinating to me.
Yeah. And then Jamie said the same thing. Me and her are completely in agreement about this, that, like, we being Linux using technically sophisticated, technically broad and experimental individuals could absolutely go to town on this for that particular.
It'd be fun.
Yeah. And I've given some thought to SteamOS again today in lieu of these announcements, because I knew it used to be Debian based. I always mix up if it was Debian Ubuntu, but I only recently learned that they moved to Arch. which everybody is figuring is going to be what's going to be backing the device physically when it comes out, assuming there is no big other change since then, in as much as a Linux distribution actually matters, blah, 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 blah. So I completely agree with you with everything that you said, Rob, but reiterate that that's a subset of a subset. Yeah. This is advertised to gamers. So for somebody to realize, oh, I can use this couple $100 gaming thing for all of these other purposes, you would still need to buy a keyboard. You probably are only going to use schoolwork stuff when docked on a screen, to which conversely, yes, those cheaper laptops that are actually laptops advertised as general purpose exist. The Pi 400s in particular, the computer in the keyboard models, I have one. Those things are friggin' superb. And they're even cheaper.
I think it's important to say, though, that is all in the marketing, and that would be things that they could bring up in year two and year three. For example, Beyonce did not appear in ads for the Nintendo 3DS the first year. No, they got her to do those ads when that thing was already 4 or 5 years old to try to reach more people. In other words, anybody who likes any type of music, because Beyonce is, you know, universal in the music world. But you get what I'm saying. Like, you know, those types of like celebrity endorsements and things like that, those don't come until you usually. I mean, of course, I'm sure in chat you're probably gonna say, but what about this? What about this? Yes, of course, there's exceptions to every rule. But usually those types of big celebrity endorsements and that expansion of, you know, what is this for comes later in the cycle. So I think there's
it's subcultural. It's subcultural endorsement. Let's take an example. Tommy Tallarico. It's subcultural before it's mainstream cultural when you have demonstrated your success, the value that you can provide in both directions. Yeah, absolutely. That's the give and take. Like Valve, when has Valve ever marketed? Conversely to that, Valve markets through Steam. Like, have they ever had a TV commercial? Like, they could have a banner ad, but outside of their service, like, where else do you hear about Steam? Where else do you hear about Valve's products by Valve outside of Steam?
I wonder.
Could legitimately be answers to this. I don't watch TVs. I use ad blockers. You know, I'm legitimately asking this at large. I'm not expecting a direct answer from you, but like because I avoid advertisements like the plague. I am actually just not exposed to this kind of thing, and I'm a bad barometer for mainstream advertising.
I guess my quick answer to that is, but you know about it, so they got you somehow. No, they didn't get you through advertising, but you know about this.
Because I read these news.
Right.
So,
they
that goes
have
back
the
to
techies.
Subcultural. I'm in this community.
They have the techies. They need to advertise in the non-techie spaces when they're ready to recruit those people. I think that's my short and sweet kind of response to that, I guess. All right. I do want to answer this, though, because I actually, you know, I love you chatters. The part of why you guys are here is so that we have diverse opinions and discussion and things like that. I'm going to say to this comment, I really disagree. And Rama, sorry, but it's you. Rama says, I scrolled it off the screen now. I called him out and then I don't even have the receipts here to read. There it is. The Steam Deck is just Gabe thumbing his nose at Nintendo. Nothing else more. I super disagree with that statement, actually.
Mm-mm.
Here's the thing.
I disagree as well.
Here's the thing, and Rama, I will give you this. Is the Steam Deck a response of sorts to the Nintendo Switch? Yes. That part I will agree. Did they think about the Steam Deck before they ever saw a Nintendo Switch? I doubt it. Not in this form that it's in now anyway. They might have thought about like portable, you know, but I think the Switch paved the way for this to exist. That being said, go ahead, Jamie.
Just bear in mind also too, research and development time.
Yes. That
so it can't be a reaction to this new Switch. It had to have been in process for a while.
That being said, if I'm at Nintendo and I'm seeing this right now, I don't give a shit. Like, I'm looking at this going, that's really interesting. But
when did they ever?
At the end of the day, they're not going to give a shit. Like, and they didn't do that with the PSP or any of that other stuff. And the reason why is because let's not forget what Nintendo is very good at: making games. And Nintendo Switch is always going to be the only place you can play Mario, Zelda, Metroid, and all of that
Most
stuff.
Pokemon.
That is why. Now, going back to what you are, you know, and giving, again, I'm not like saying like everything you say is wrong. There are elements of this that I do think work here. Going back to what I said earlier, now, this is why I am surprised. And if Valve really was trying to punch Nintendo in the face here, this is what you would have seen. This is why I'm surprised Valve did not have the Valve game that is better on this thing that is not going to come out on Nintendo Switch, i.e. Portal 3, i.e. Left 4 Dead 3, i.e. Half-Life 3. There is no Half-Life 3, you stupid slut.
Yeah, this whole especially for three hosts that have been doing a show for a human's entire developmental life, like we can take this conversation back endlessly. People see a Steam link. Jesus. They see a stream, Drek. Oh, I mean, God, these freaking words this week have been a nightmare. People see a Steam Deck and visually draw an immediate contrast to the Switch. But the only thing that a Steam Deck is a Steam controller and an untethered Steam machine. This is not like, you know, a completely copy-paste job or new in the making development of Valve's own products. This isn't a new development in the PC series. There was a series of PCs back in the mid-aughts. I think I even remember it in high school. There was a computer that was basically like a T-Mobile sidekick, a hip-top sidekick, called the OQO, that was the same fucking thing with a physical keyboard. Even to this day, I saw somebody saying, "Hey, to downplay the they're targeting Nintendo." The GPD Win has existed for, I actually don't even know how long. I'm gonna say I think three or four years. Exactly.
Okay, so and Rama's pushing back a little bit here, and I understand, I get it. And I wonder, and bringing up some of the same stuff you're bringing up, Jason. So says, Rama says in chat, when the Switch became this popular, let's not forget that there are other manufacturers doing the same thing. I present the Aya Neo and the GPD Win 2 and 3. So you're wrong, my friend. So here's the thing. And then goes on to say, same thing, man. Nintendo created, others want a copy. In that kind of context, I think we do have some similar ground. But there's a difference, in my opinion, between that and doing something to kind of like get at Nintendo or challenge Nintendo. Here's the parallel that comes to my mind. I don't know who did it first. In my mind, it was Oreo that did it first. And let me explain what that is. What Oreo did first, I think, was they started putting out all of those fucking flavors. And I mean a lot of fucking flavors. I mean, there's the Oreo peanut butter. There's the Oreo strawberry. There's the Oreos that taste like s'mores.
Carrot cake.
There's the Oreos that taste like carrot cake. They probably have ass Oreos at this point. For those, if you love ass, have an ass Oreo. That is probably a thing that exists. My point, everybody saw what was happening with Oreo and was like, huh, that's a pretty good idea. Let's try that our way. They're not necessarily doing it to compete with Oreo. They're doing it to expand their own longevity. And what I'm talking about is breakfast cereals. Now you go into the store, and granted, of course, Nabisco is one of the cereal makers, so they probably stole from themselves, but you also have General Mills and other companies. And now it's Oops All Berries, which is memed all the time now, right, as a flavor. Or Banana Frosted Flakes, which is the fucking yummiest flavor thing I have ever had.
Does it taste like the extinct Cavendish or like current bananas?
It tastes good. That's all I know. There's that. And all of those other flavors.
You know
flavors.
About banana flavoring, right?
Yes. Now there's Wheat Thins in all sorts of different flavors. So you name it, there's a million different flavors. And I kind of... So my comparison here is that I think it's more that Valve saw Nintendo making a new flavor here and going, huh, we should try doing what we do in a similar flavor. But that's not to say that, oh, now you're no longer going to buy Oreos because you're going to buy this. I think it's that both can actually kind of coexist side by side for a lot of people.
To say nothing of the DS,
what's to say?
PSP, the PS Vita.
Yes.
If you've got the disposable income for it, buy whatever the fuck you want. End of story.
Yeah. Yeah. Whoever was first, whoever was best, like all those arguments are always going to happen. And they're moot because in the grand scheme of things, the grand scheme of things is made up of every individual story. And exactly as Jamie just said, get in it for you. Do what it is for you. You do have to calculate, you know, you do have to consider the longevity. You know, if this flops and Steam discontinues it, what does that mean for breakage and repair?
How long did I link my N-gauge? Let my N-gauge along.
How long did Loki keep his Ouya before he sold it off?
All right.
Not long.
I gotta wrap up because we're almost to midnight, but I think that this Steam Deck conversation is certainly not going away. At the end of the day, I want to play one. I feel like there is a lot I'm saying here that's just kind of like feeling because I haven't had my hands on one yet. I feel like I can answer a lot more about how does it really compare to a Switch once I actually play it. Right now, yeah. It's just thoughts. Anyway, Jason, great topic. Anything else you want to say before we let you go and wrap up the show tonight?
We opine because we can opine, and we are here to provide insight and consideration to people. A game is a system is only good as the games that are on it. Your choice is your choice for your own reasons.
Yes. All right.
You do the research.
Jason, thanks so much for being on the show, and thanks again for all you do. And I would
good
say
this night, lady and gents.
This pilot was a bit of a success, so for those of you that Yay. Have been asking for this to come back, I think we'll have to look into that. So thanks, Jason. You take care.
Are we making a note here? Huge success?
Huge success. All right, I'm gonna pull you out of the chat. Take care, Jason.
Later.
All right. There we go. That worked out very well. At the end of the day, I only play fight with Rama. It's not a real fight. I play fight with Rama because he's one of my favorite people, and I know I can do that with him. Let's see. Lots of great stuff in chat right now. The one other comment I wanted to read, because I did it is also topical. It has to do with that comment about the Microsoft tweet. SG100 Matt says, God damn it, it keeps slowing on the screen. Listen, the official Xbox Twitter account said this week, to the people in our replies saying PS5 is better, the best console is the one you enjoy playing. Have fun. That's a very...
Exactly.
It's such a different perspective on things than the days of Genesis does what Nintendo don't. It's now I feel like everybody's holding hands and singing we're all in this together. And maybe that has to do... This has to do something with maybe the state of the games industry, where unfortunately layoffs, closures, and change in the industry is so common that people really do create a big family of sorts in the game development industry, where it's really about, you know, holding hands with each other and not necessarily wanting to fight. So anyway, good discussion. I did see one other question in chat that I thought was worth a quick discussion before we wrap up tonight. No One Special had asked, and I'm going to paraphrase here because it scrolled off the screen, but what is the worst game you have ever played? The worst video game you've ever played? And I thought that was a cute question. So
WCW Thunder.
And why was it the worst?
Well, it was so bad that an hour after bringing it home, Dan and I turned around and took it back to Blockbuster. It was that bad.
Oh, yes. I remember that. I do remember
Tay,
that.
You stop it.
I love that. Tay and Chad says by Daylight. By Daylight.
Don't confuse the PC version with mobile, okay?
The point I do... Tay says this, and a lot of people I watch stream Dead by Daylight say this, is that behavior gets away with a lot of shit. Like,
they do.
Behavior is sometimes resting on those licenses that they have that, you know, create the multiverse of horror films, and that game is so fucking buggy sometimes. They really do get away with a lot. So, yeah.
Right. It's a crazy addiction. Yeah.
Tay says, I hate that fucking cursed game, but I can't stop playing it. That's a discussion for another week. What is a fucking cursed thing you can't stop doing? Whether that's playing a game or whatever it is. All right. Let's see. So Darkstalker, I know you're going to bow out so you can set up for the post stream.
Yeah.
Anything last you thoughts you want to get out here while we give our own worst games and then wrap up here?
Have your neighbors spayed and neutered.
All right. Thank you, Jamie.
I wish I could sometimes, but it's already too late.
No, just find one person, just one person that you interact with, and say something really kind to them. That's all. Do one kind act.
Okay.
I want to see where it goes.
All right. Take care, Jamie. Thanks for being here. We'll see you in a little bit. All right.
Lates.
Loki, do you have a worst game you've ever played?
I'm sure I blocked it from my memory if I did. The only thing that sort of I can kind of vaguely remember Bullet Witch, and that was terrible. That's the only one I could think of right now, because if it was so bad, I wouldn't remember it.
Fusion Frenzy 2 on the Xbox 360.
Yeah,
is my
that
answer.
Is very terrible.
That game
I know
was
that's a
fucking
terrible
game. Garbage. Hot Mario Party, I thought it was going to be, but it was not garbage. That was a bad game. I remember some 8-bit knockoff games, too, like from the companies that couldn't even get the actual Nintendo seal of approval.
I didn't like Back to the Future 2 and 3, because like I bought Back to the Future 2 and 3 because I saw like Nintendo Power cover like the original Back to the Future NES game, and those games were not like the Back to the Future 1 game. They were very different and not very good.
My other answer, and all my music game fans out there and the roots of our show and everything, listen up, because I know you're going to agree with this answer. Worst game I've ever played, Beat and Groovy, the American version of Poppin' Music on the Xbox 360. Fucking terrible.
Wait. Oh, yeah. Pod Culture says Lollipop Chainsaw. You know, that game had it looked like it had potential, but yeah.
All right. Let's wrap up and get final thoughts and close up shop here tonight. Or actually, I don't know if you have any other last minute stories quickly, Loki.
I don't.
Okay. We're after 9 o'clock anyway, which is midnight on the East Coast. So we do want to wrap up. Final thoughts. We are at the end of the show. Thank you very much for tuning in. And whether you participated with us live on Twitch, or if you downloaded our podcast on Spotify, iTunes, wherever it is you listen to podcasts, please help us spread the word. Tell a friend about the show, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice. But if the voices aren't here to put out on air, auto hosts on Twitch, they go an awful long way as well. And we really appreciate those. You don't have to, but if you feel so inclined, check out the shop over at vognetwork.com/shop. We have some Orange Lounge Radio t-shirts, and you can get some other merch for the Bobby Blackwolf Show and Vogue Network in general, and I'm sure more to come in the future. So check that out over at vognetwork.com/shop if you are wanting some new threads or some stickers. Lots of things in there. That's it. Let's get final thoughts tonight. Loki. Your final thought.
So SSJ100 Matt says that I got mad at some of the newer Saints Row games. I was more disappointed in them. Like, they could have been so much better. Not necessarily mad. Now, probably if I played Agents of Mayhem, maybe I'd get mad. But no, it's just that they had so much potential. Let me put it this way. The next Saints Row game Volition announces, I mean, I'm going to buy it day one. I don't care what 4 turned out like. I'm obviously going to drop money for that whenever they announce that.
And I will be happy to answer this question from Tay. What is the best way to financially support the show directly? Thank you for that. That's very kind that people would want to do that. Word of mouth and spreading the word, that's the number one thing we want. We've never asked for money from the beginning. But yes, I know there's still people that say, but we want to. And I really appreciate that. So yes, biddies and subs here on Twitch, like a lot of other streamers, that does go back into the network. And especially as we're talking about sponsoring conventions, such as I believe Vogue Network is sponsoring again the Southern Fried Gaming Expo that's coming back in a few weeks, because I know Bobby brought it up on his show tonight and he's doing some panels there. And then as things start to come back on the West Coast, I'm hoping we can do that as well, and that's gonna really get the word out as well. That goes a long way. So yes, biddies and subs, and the shop is great too, because we do get a portion of those proceeds. And then what I like about that is that you get something too. You get a shirt, you get a sticker, you get whatever it is you want to buy. So honestly, any of those things we appreciate. But yeah, word of mouth, bits, subs, it's all great, and we really appreciate it. Vogue Network is a legit business, and that isn't cheap to do, if you believe it or not. So it's all, because you know, you have to pay for all the registration of your LLC and the PO box that we have, and all the stuff that kind of goes into it. So appreciate that very much, and I'm really excited to get back out there and spread the word live at live events again. I cannot wait for the next TwitchCon. which is interesting because I haven't been in years. The first TwitchCon I went to kind of got me into wanting to do more Twitch streaming and live streaming. I can't wait to go again. So anyway, we really do need to wrap up. My final thought, that really kind of was a very long final thought, but I will also say I will say this is a final thought. I'm having surgery in about 10 days. It's nothing major. It's nothing for you guys to be concerned about. It's I almost want to say it's a cosmetic procedure, but it's not. It's not like I'm getting Botox or anything. You can't really see it here, but I have a thing on the back of my neck, and I've had it for years, and it's finally gotten to a point where it's a little bit sore, and so we're going to get rid of it. So it's a nice thing. It's an easy thing. It's nothing to be concerned about. But still, anytime you have surgery, it's kind of a scary thing. So I appreciate any happy thoughts and all those sorts of things that you can send my way. So I appreciate that. All right. That's it. We're going to be back in 7 days to do it all again, okay? Sound good? Have a great night, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or Vogue Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.